Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Everybody in. The ceremony is about to begin.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 128. And today we have Adam the Computer Crouch with us. How are you, Adam?
Hey, Dave, I'm good. Thanks for having me. Glad to finally be here.
Yeah, you're a regular contributor. You often contribute Signal News on the show. Always available for a chat, for a discussion. Fantastic to have you on, Adam. And we're doing, and Stu will be happy that we're doing this at the top of the show, Legion of Superheroes Great Darkness Saga.
Yeah, I've been trying to get you to do some Legion for a while, so you asked me to be on the show to do this one, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And look, I mean, I've always quite liked the Legion. I used to read a fair bit chunk of them in the early 2000s, I think it was. And I've always meant to read this collection. I've had it on my shelf for many years, and it is very highly regarded. So it's fantastic to have you on to discuss this. Now, Adam, what in general, in the last month or so, what have you been reading and watching, kind of thing? Fill us in on what Adam the Computer does on his days off.
I've been kind of busy lately, and this last week I've just been trying to read that you had in The Great Darkness, but I've been watching a lot of Friday the 13th movies.
Okay.
And I'm trying to catch up on Jason Aaron's Thor run before it
ends. Right.
Yeah.
Very good run. I've read probably half of it, and it's a very solid Thor run.
Yeah, for sure. I'm up to when Thor actually comes back and he's Thor again. So.
Oh, cool. Oh, like after Lady Thor, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, cool. I haven't read that myself. That would be good. I really think when Jason Aaron ends of picking up like omnibuses of his whole run, because there's got to be at least two omnibuses,
Yeah, I think there might be one out already.
Okay, all right.
I hear Donnie Cates might be taking over after he's done, so I'm hoping to get on the ground floor with that as well.
Okay, G. Johnny Cates is a prolific writer at Marvel at the moment.
Yeah, he definitely is. I haven't loved everything he's done, but some of the stuff he's done is really good. Thanos and Venom are both really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't read a ton. I just noticed that he is just everywhere at Marvel over the last year.
Yeah, he's just really caught a lot of attention very quickly.
Oh, well, good for him. I mean, it's going to be a challenge to follow Jason Aaron on Thor. It really will be a challenge, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if anybody's really up to that task. It's kind of like following Geoff Johns on Green Lantern.
Yeah, very similar. And they certainly, I think, fumbled the ball post Geoff Johns on Green Lantern. Like, they never really sort of have recaptured that vibe.
Not quite, yeah.
For me, it's all been about the Walking Dead acquisitions. I told you about this, Adam. I purchased all the hard covers all the way up to volume 15 of The Walking Dead. So just a little bit of reading for Davey.
Yeah, that's going to take you a while. I was impressed, just dropping that amount of cash.
Well, the deals were pretty reasonable, actually, on Amazon. Like, I didn't actually have to spend that much to get it. Was going to say, I've probably read up to about volume 3 of the hard covers, but I'm going to start from the beginning. Just go from the beginning again. I think we did volume 1 on the show of Walking Dead, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
Yeah. So I'm gonna dive a lot deeper. So that's kind of been my week. And yeah, the reading for this week was like reading the Bible. It was long. It was a long damn read. Like, I was still reading it like minutes before the show to finish off.
Yeah, very dense.
Can I ask you before we get there? Excuse me. Can I ask you before we get there, what year is Great Darkness Saga, like, roughly? Is it early 80s?
Yeah, early 80s, I think, around 82. So,
okay.
Could be 84. 82 or 84, but it's before Crisis.
Okay. It's pre-crisis. Right. Okay, cool. Because although it's dense, I did find it quite sort of – it is dated, but not in a really bad way. Like, it's dated like anything from 82, but I still found it was a very readable comic. Like, you weren't reading and thinking this is from way, way yesteryear.
Yeah,
you know?
I find it reads better than, like, Claremont X-Men or Wolfman Titans. That stuff's pretty dated, but I think here, since they're trying to be 1,000 years in the future, maybe they kind of avoided some of those pitfalls.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. We'll get into more conversation regarding the book when we get to it. Now, there's a lot of big news this week, and I think we want to kick off with the Spider-Man news. Spidey's reportedly moving away from Marvel Studios' co-sharing agreement with Sony. Kevin Feige will not be involved moving forward. This is according to a Deadline report. Originally, the report was saying that a 50-50 co-financing deal between Marvel Studios was the requesting that was the apparent kicker, because right now, for the last films with this co-sharing agreement, it was a 5/95 split of the profits from the movies, whereas they wanted a 50-50 co-financing deal and 50-50 split of the revenue from the films. Reports from Deadline emerged that Marvel are actually after a 25-75 split, not 50-50. So, look, there's a lot to unpack here. Basically, for, you know, casual people, Spider-Man has effectively been kind of leased to Marvel Studios because Sony owned the rights of Spider-Man and have since, I think, the late 90s. It sounds like that Spider-Man won't be involved moving forward in the Marvel Studios movies, and there'll be more movies coming from Sony that will just have Spider-Man, and Tom Holland still has, I believe, 2 or 3 movies on his contract. What do you think, mate? What are your kind of like thoughts from this whole sort of mess?
Yeah, like you say, it's a weird situation. It's like Disney has the rights with Sony, but then they're leasing them back from Sony. It's just... kind of a mess, but to me, 25-75 doesn't sound terrible. I think part of Disney's stance is, you know, they're not doing the Avengers for a while, so they wouldn't really probably be using Tom Holland in their Marvel Cinematic Universe movies that much. So, you know, maybe we want a bigger cut of the Spider-Man material that's actually put out there, but, you know, maybe they want him to show up in other places too. But I hope they work it out.
Something interesting. Something interesting. A few years ago, one thing about the Spider-Man deal for Disney is they get all the revenue from all the merchandising, which is massive for Spider-Man. Apparently, Spider-Man merchandise reportedly outsells Batman merchandise. And a few years ago, for $175 million, they acquired all the rights to the merchandising. So Spider-Man is still a very, very valuable figure for Disney in terms of merchandising. So, and that's one of the reasons why in the comics they never, unlike the X-Men where they had not a very good deal with Fox, Spider-Man's always been front and center of the Marvel Universe because they just simply make so much money out of him whether or not they have the movies.
Yeah, and he's like their mascot, so I feel like he's pretty important. Exactly. But that's weird that they have the money for the merchandise. So what if they make a movie and then they make a toy about the movie? Does Disney still get that money?
Yes. Oh. Basically, they paid $175 million several years ago, a one-off payment to acquire all those merchandising rights off Sony.
Well, you know what I will say for Sony in this situation, if they do end up with Spider-Man, is they made the best Spider-Man movie in Spider-Verse without Disney's help. So maybe they have people, you know, they have Lord and Miller now who maybe have a good handle on Spider-Man, that maybe we don't need him in the MCU for a while.
Well, that's very true. I mean, Into the Spider-Verse won an Oscar. Yeah, Venom is an interesting movie. Like, I had fun with it in the cinema, although I felt it was very, very flawed. But I had fun, and it made $800 million. And I think a huge part of what Sony want, and I can understand this, they want Spider-Man in the Venom movies and in their Spider-Verse movies. And I believe Marvel were very resistant to that idea. But if I'm Sony and I own the rights to Spider-Man, and Spider-Man's got an extensive rogues gallery and supporting cast – and, you know, like he does, there is a lot of Spider-Man sort of universe. He kind of has his own universe at Marvel. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, when they always talk about doing like a Morbius movie and a Silk movie, I always kind of scoffed at it. But to be honest, I think they probably do have enough where they could do a nice little universe over there.
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of buying the Spider-Man IP, you get a lot with that as well. And if you have Spider-Man in the movies, well, suddenly it's a lot more doable. Because I think, you know, some of these movies, like a Silver Sable movie without Spider-Man at all, it kind of struggles. Or a Black Cat movie without Spider-Man, it struggles. But then you bring him in, and suddenly it's feeling like it's quite possible. Yeah.
I agree with that, actually, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this isn't a scenario where one studio is good, one studio is bad. This is a business arrangement. Marvel were close to bankruptcy when they sold the rights to Spider-Man, you know, many years ago. Yeah. And there was some reports. You had a report, because apparently this is all still very live discussions. We're getting a rare peek behind the curtain, I think, into some major negotiations between Sony and Disney. And nothing's locked in stone. Like, just at D23, Tom Holland and Kevin Feige were both – like, Tom Holland was saying – I'm going to continue as Spider-Man in whatever shape that takes. So, I mean, the kid's not walking away from the role. I don't see any reason why he would.
Yeah, I think they'll work something out, too, honestly. Like, we know for a long time we thought James Gunn wasn't coming back for Guardians 3, and that seemed like a much more impossible situation to me than these guys working something out.
Yeah, no, I think we'll get somewhere on this. Like, there was a rumor, and it came off Cosmic Book News, and you brought it to my attention. A new Spider-Man deal is rumored to include 7 movies, Avengers, and more. So a 6-picture deal with Tom Holland with an option for a 7th. There are 3 more Spider-Man films after Spider-Man 3, which will be a new trilogy. The second trilogy will focus on Peter Parker's college years, including plans for Peter to meet up and team up with Firestar and Iceman of the X-Men, based in part on the old Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends cartoon. The other 3 movies are 2 Avengers films in which Spider-Man will have a larger role and become friends with Johnny Storm, Human Torch. And Marvel Studios will helm and co-finance all the Spider-Man-related movies for 30% of the full profits. Sony will distribute, but Disney will acquire exclusive digital and online rights for Disney Plus and affiliated TV networks. Marvel Studios will helm and co-finance Spider-Verse live-action spin-offs under the same terms. Now, what do you think? For me, this felt a bit like a fan writing in what they dreamed. And I've been researching this. Have you come across any more sort of rumors from this source?
Yeah, now that some time has passed, I'm pretty sure this is probably just wishful thinking, especially, you know, everything just sounds a little too good to be true. You know, Iceman and Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, it just doesn't sound very likely.
No, this felt like a fan was writing down what they fucking dreamed, you know? And like, who's Firestar, even? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've never even read a Firestar in the comics, so...
You don't know Firestar at all?
No, not at all.
Oh, I thought you might know her from the cartoon.
No, I've never watched the original. I know of it. Gotcha. But that's it. Stan Lee's daughter spoke out, and she was talking about the relationship Stan Lee had. When my father died, she says, no one from Marvel or Disney reached out to me. From day one, they have commoditized my father's work and never shown him or his legacy any respect or decency. She went on to say, in the end, no one could have treated my father worse than Marvel and Disney's executives. Strong words.
Huh. Yeah.
I mean, let's not forget that this is the same lady who reportedly just blew up credit card debt all over the place and kind of had a hand in the pocket of Stan Lee for, you know, her whole life.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make any accusations against her or anything, but just I don't take what she says with very much, you know, take it with a grain of salt that, you know, because there are accusations against her as well, I feel like.
Well, let's not forget, like, let's not shy away from the Signal. There was heavy issues with her and some of the handlers towards the later years of Stan Lee's life.
Yeah, elder abuse. Yeah, that's what I was...
Yeah, that's what you were alluding to, Adam. Yeah. I think, were you?
Yeah, I was coming in under the radar there. Yeah, her and
coming in hot.
You remember that guy that was always in the news, who was like his right, like always.
Helping Sonny Stan. Morgan.
What was it?
Was it something Morgan?
Yeah, that sounds right. But yeah, that guy just seemed like a dick. So, I think he's in trouble now.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some. Yeah, I will say this. Like, we don't know the financial aspects of what Stan's deal was with Marvel. I think he got kind of like a pension, kind of a couple million dollars a year or something. And I will say this. Like, Stan is a very lucky example of someone who made money from comics. But, like, what he earned is a fraction, like a tiny fraction of what his character's brought in over the many decades. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, though, Stan was a businessman himself. You know, look at the problems he had with Jack Kirby, for instance.
Yes.
But, you know, yes. We don't have to talk about that. But
No, we don't have to. No, he's a complicated individual, yeah. And the deals that he cut at times left others in the cold, you know, basically.
Yeah, I feel like he was probably happy with his arrangement with Marvel Studios, at least, you know. He got to be in all the movies, you know.
Yes.
Everybody knows Stan Lee because of those movies.
No, you're 100% right there. It's interesting, I think, really, to I don't think she has much cause to complain, basically, his daughter. I think she's her cash cow has finally passed away, but be interesting to see what happens to her moving forward.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we had D23 on the horizon. Now, this was very interesting. Some big news has dropped from D23, and, you know, I'd be fascinated to get your thoughts. First off, we had the Mandalorian trailer, by Jon Favreau's Mandalorian. Have you seen this trailer, Adam?
Yeah, it looked great. I was surprised how good the effects looked. You know, I thought it would be more grounded for television, but it almost looked like a Star Wars movie, you know, just an 8-hour, 9-hour movie.
Yeah. I thought it was, I personally thought it looked fantastic.
Yeah, and I didn't realize, I was trying to think who was playing the Mandalorian. I guess it's the guy that played, I forget his name.
It's
he was in Game of Thrones.
Pedro Pascal.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be like a mystery who it was, and then he'd take off his mask and it was a woman or something. But I was curious to see who it was.
He didn't take his mask off in the actual trailer at all.
Yeah, exactly. So I wasn't sure who was playing him, but yeah, it looked really cool. Is that something that you're interested in then?
Oh, very much. I'm 100% getting Disney streaming service, Disney Plus streaming service, and I'm eagerly awaiting The Mandalorian. I'm actually really pumped. What about those? I believe it's set in the days of the New Republic, so it's set a few years after Return of the Jedi, I believe.
Yeah, and I think that character at the end, I'm not sure. I thought that was Werner Herzog, and I thought he was in... Was he not in Episode 7 at the very beginning?
I have no idea if he was in Episode 7 at the beginning, but it is Walter Herzog, I know that.
Yeah, I think he might have been, and there might be some kind of connection with what happens in Mandalorian, and then he was trying to give some plans to Poe Dameron at the beginning of Episode 7, so I'll be curious to see how that plays out.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, no, I mean, what about those black... Well, sort of like Stormtroopers, but all in black.
To be honest, I didn't even notice.
Yeah, they're sort of holding guns at, I believe, at the Mandalorian. I don't know. I just thought it was a really cool trailer, a very, very moody sort of... They're definitely going for that space western vibe.
Yeah, that was cool. To be honest, when you see new things in Star Wars, I try not to get too excited because I feel like they always are things that show up for a scene or something. So
yeah.
I try not to speculate too much.
No, it's fair. I mean, look, I just think, like, this is on rapid approach now, this Disney streaming service. I mean, we've got more news about it coming up. Now, D23 was, like, packed with information. Is D23 open to the general public, Adam, or is it just purely a press event?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's, like, a convention that you can get tickets to, but I'm not sure.
Wow. Man, I tell you what, if I was over there in the States, I'd be going to a lot more of these kind of things. Like, I reckon... Like, I really would. Like, you're spoiled for choice, really, aren't you?
I know. I should be doing these things. Where is it? Is it in LA?
You know what? I don't know. And you know what? This is something new that I'm doing on the Signal now. I'm doing live research on the show. So let's type in D23. You know, I'm really taking up a notch, aren't I, Adam? Have you noticed my journalism has really gone to a new level these days? ever since Stu, we haven't even mentioned him in this show. Stu, ever since Stu's been on jury duty for feels like about 4 years, I've taken it up an absolute massive notch. Okay. We're located in – it's in California. Yeah, so okay. So it's over there. So you had it right.
I have friends out there that I really should be taking advantage of, you know, for a place to stay.
Where's Anaheim? Isn't that where Disneyland is?
I think so.
Yeah, I believe it is. So anyway, that's where it's at the Anaheim Convention Center in Anaheim, California.
Yeah, maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Now, some big news came out. The Obi-Wan show has been greenlit, Adam. And this has been – I mean, we discussed this on the Signal last week. This has certainly been a very like Ewan McGregor has been involved in talks, it feels like, for a long time. Where are you in regards to the Obi-Wan show? Because I myself am reasonably excited. Not as excited as I am for Mandalorian, but like the next year down, I am excited by Obi-Wan.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, like you say, it feels like it's been talked about for almost a year now that, you know, it's been off and on rumor. I think the question is, and I think you and Stu talked about it before, is when is this going to take place? You know, do we really need every minute of Star Wars accounted for in between?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and I don't really want to see him on Tatooine. I'd be more interested if it was, like, his journey to Tatooine. I think Stu had that idea.
Well, I believe it's set – I think they said it's set, like, 7 or 8 years after the events of Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, okay, so it might be on Tatooine. Yeah, I am down. I think everybody agrees that Ewan McGregor wasn't the problem with the prequels.
No, no, he wasn't the problem. In fact, I thought he lent some legitimacy to them at times, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Legitimacy to them at times. There we go. I got it on take two. Yeah, look, I mean, I like Stu's pitch, which was Ewan McGregor, Obi-Wan, roaming around the galaxy still. Like, he's dropped the baby off, okay? Like, in Revenge of the Sith. Doesn't he give the baby to them at the end of Revenge of the Sith?
He does, yeah.
Yeah, so, and this is 7 or 8 years after. There's nothing saying that he has to be just located on Tatooine.
Yeah, you're right. Good point.
Yeah, well, I always thought, how boring is going to be if it's just old Ben Kenobi out on the sand dunes?
Yeah.
And then Stu's like, there's nothing stopping him from journeying around. He could fight Vader again. He could do all sorts of things. Like, it's never said that he didn't fight Vader again in the intervening years. I think that there would be another clash between the two of them. I'm excited for it. I just hope that it's not just him on the desert planet, because that could get very dull very quickly.
Yeah, you know, it could be interesting if it was done as, like, a Western somehow.
Well, you could have Jabba the Hutt,
because
Jabba the Hutt's on Tatooine.
Yeah, for sure. I know in the comic book, the Jason Aaron comics, I think Boba Fett comes and tries to steal – he comes and tries to kill Obi-Wan.
Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that would be very cool. Yeah, look, I mean, it's interesting, and like, I'm just glad they finally fucking cut the deal, because it feels like the whole time we've done the Signal, this has kind of been in the background, you know, like, and Ewan McGregor, good actor, obviously loved playing the role, is very open to it, so I'm down 100%. They've got me at hello, really. Now, turning to the next piece of news, this is huge news, and a huge shout out to Ray and Connor at Inner Demons, not Inner Demons, at Into the Night. The Moon Knight show is officially been announced at D23 as well. Now, you know how many times these guys must have just stayed up at night hoping and dreaming that Moon Knight was a reality. And suddenly it's here. What's your reaction, Adam?
I'm very excited. I'm not as big as a Moon Knight fan as those guys, but
the
costume alone is just awesome, and what I know about the character is a really unique concept. So I'm all for it.
Oh, I'm 100% down as well. Like, just I'm really happy for them, because I know that this is kind of their favorite character. And but also, it's an interesting character when you explore it. Like, there's multiple personalities. There's kind of a dark god over them. And what is that god real or not? He's a mercenary. There's all sorts of angles that you can go with Moon Knight, which I think the comics at times have done really well. Like, there are some really good Moon Knight comics. Like, I wouldn't ever say he's one of my favorite characters, but he's definitely one of the coolest Marvel characters, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm excited. And a huge shout out to Into the Night. There are long-standing friends of the show. Ray's been on the show several times now. I mean, I'd almost call him a linchpin, Adam, wouldn't you?
Oh, definitely. I like Ray.
He brings a lot to the table. And we also have a She-Hulk show. And for listeners who aren't aware who She-Hulk is, she's a cousin of Bruce Banner who, I believe, got a blood transfusion which had some of his blood, or maybe it was his blood, in it, and she got the sort of gamma virus, which turned it into like an intelligent Hulk. And she was already a lawyer, so she's kind of a lawyer as well as being a superhero. She's a pretty cool character, I think, personally, She-Hulk.
Yeah, I think so, too. I know there's a Dan Slott run that's pretty highly regarded.
There's a Chucky Soul run as well, which is pretty good as well.
Yeah, I like that one, too. And I, you know, it seems like there's lots they can do with the character. I just, it's just a strange dilemma because you'll have She-Hulk, who they'd probably want, you know, a larger woman for. So are you casting for her or are you casting for Jennifer Walters? Does she really change back to Jennifer Walters very often?
Well, in the comics, from what I've seen, most of the time, I've seen She-Hulk, like, Hulk out. But most of the time, she sort of, like, I don't know, like, her Jennifer Walters and She-Hulk, like, there's not that much of a difference other than she's a bit bigger and green, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like she's, like, a bodybuilder size, but then Jennifer Walters is kind of just a, you know, regular size person.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Like, but you can tell it's Jennifer Walters is my point, even when she's She-Hulk. Because she doesn't Hulk out as much as the regular Hulk, does she?
Well, I think now she does with the Jason Aaron stuff, but I'm not.
I'm talking about classic, though. You know what I'm
saying?
Yeah. Like, I'm not talking about the last 5 minutes. you know, I don't know. Like, interesting. Like, I don't know. They'll need to get a decent actress for it, though, as well, because I find She-Hulk a pretty cool character. I actually like She-Hulk quite a lot. We also had Ms. Marvel. I mean, that's put me to sleep news. Like, I don't know if you're excited for Ms. Marvel. I know I'm not.
You know, I hear her run was really good with G. Willow Wilson. I haven't really checked out much of it, but, you know, if they're putting out characters that maybe aren't for me but are something that'll bring somebody else to it, you know, that's fine with me. But
I'm fine with it existing. It's just not for me, but it's aggressively not for me. But, I mean, dude, we've been forced down our throats over the last 5 to 10 years, Ms. Marvel, and it's been – Disney have tried to pump this up as if they're doing, you know, world peace.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, of course, there's an audience out there, and God bless them. Will I be watching it? No way.
I'll check it out. But...
Will you? Really? Wow. I'll trooper, Adam. Yeah?
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Well, I'll leave it to Stu, because let's not forget, when Stu went and saw Captain Marvel, 9.5 out of 10. I mean, I still laugh about that one. Stu was guzzling the Kool-Aid straight from the fountain. It was almost like he had the hose just into his mouth. Like, I mean, it was just ridiculous. Like, so maybe he'll be giving a 9.5 or maybe a perfect 10 to Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Oh, you know what I wanted to mention, too? I know they said that Ms. Marvel will be showing up in the movies as well. I don't know if they said that about the other characters or not.
Well, they did say that all these shows are basically extensions of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Kevin Feige was very upfront about that. So, look, I mean, Moon Knight gives me hopes for a Marvel Knight show as well, with like, because Ghost Rider is going to be over at Hulu with the same actor who played him in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but a new chronology. So they're just using the same actor, but starting from scratch again.
Yeah, it kind of bothers me, though, because I feel like, if they're putting it over at Hulu, maybe they, you know, maybe it'll be separate. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that. That's a good point. But then we're going to have, like, you know, I think that Punisher might have a little bit of a rest for a year or two. But I want my Punisher, Ghost Rider, Moon Knight, Marvel Knights comic. And maybe, and we know there's a Blade movie coming, so I guess we won't get a Blade TV show. But, dude, some of these characters, like, are starting to excite me. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they do good shows of guys like Moon Knight, Ghost Rider, a Blade movie. Davey's starting to get a bit excited again, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely like a new corner of the universe they haven't really gotten into before.
Well, yeah, while they're doing what I consider some of the lamer characters, like a Ms. Marvel, some of the other second-tier characters are pretty cool. So I kind of feel like everyone's getting a chance to eat their cake a little bit, which I like. You know, I'm a big fan of, like, if you're a Marvel or DC, give me a selection. Give me a balanced diet. So don't just go for one thing. I don't want everything to be Ms. Marvel, and I don't want everything to be Moon Knight. I like the idea of a sort of balance, so catering to different demographics. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Just kind of flesh things out. Different feels for different shows. I like that.
Yeah, definitely. You know what? I'm going to say it right now on the seal. I'm going to be doing episode-by-episode reviews of Moon Knight. There it is. And we're going to have Ray on. We're going to go in deep on Moon Knight. And I'll make another prediction. Within 2 to 3 years, there'll be a Marvel Knight show on Disney Plus. You know, right, I've got a feeling.
Well, what does it have to be called? Marvel Knights, or will they call it Night Stalkers, or something like that?
Either one of those two things.
Okay.
I think they'll use Marvel Knights because I think they've got some branding there, but we'll see. We'll see. And I mean, it could be street level. It could be the reintroduction of Daredevil and Punisher. You know?
Yeah, that'd be cool. I hope they come back for sure, especially Daredevil.
Man, yeah, and especially Punisher as well, Adam. What are you talking about? Like.
I mean, Daredevil 3 just left us on such a good note that I'd really like to see that go, but I didn't even watch Punisher Season 2 yet, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
I've watched nine episodes of it. It's pretty good. Like, it's pretty good. John Bernthal's very good, put it that way.
Oh, he's always great, yeah.
Yeah. Now, we have some news. This is very Disney-centric. We've got big news on Disney+. So it's coming in November to the US, Canada, and Australia at a very attractive price point. $6.99 per month in the States, or $69.99 paid annually. Canada, the Netherlands, and Australia will be able to start. Netherlands, Australia, New Zealand, as well as US, will be able to start streaming in November. This is going to be fantastic. It also outlined what platforms it's going to be on. I believe it was on Xbox, PS4, all sorts of on most apps. The only one that it wasn't announced on yet was the Amazon service. But like, and then apparently they're also going to try to stamp out password sharing. But at Disney Plus, they already said that that wasn't a priority for them at all. This is really exciting from an Australian perspective. We're normally screwed in terms of the streaming deals and stuff, but it's going to be available here from November. I'm getting it day one. What about you, Adam?
Yeah, I'm happy for you that you can get it. I'll definitely be getting it. I'll probably try to password share it first, but
of course,
there's already like nine. You know, between the Marvel shows and the two Star Wars shows, it's like 9 or 10 shows already that I really want to see.
And I believe they've got like, I think it was over 500 movies or something already that are going to be coming out with it. There were some stats about it. Like, basically, it's going to have The Mandalorian. Now, one thing is they're doing week by week, so The Mandalorian won't drop in one bulk like Netflix does. They're going to be releasing their shows week by week. And I think part of that is to try to build up a bit of a sort of need to keep going back or something. So what do you think about that? Do you prefer, when you're looking at these shows, to have a binge-worthy experience like Netflix does with, say, a Punisher or a Daredevil, or would you prefer it week by week?
You know, I like the binge. I'm more likely to keep up with a binge. Getting around to watching it every week, just either that or I'll just wait till it's done anyway, pretty much.
Me too. I far prefer to have the option of just going. If I want, like when I watched Titans, I was kind of like, okay, for me, it's a way of, like, when I've got time, I can watch 2 or 3 in a row, exactly. Whereas week by week's harder for me to schedule in.
Some people just throw a fit about the binge model. They're just like, well, I'll get spoilers, and I don't have time to watch it right away. It's like, just stay away from the news then.
Yeah, like, Jesus Christ, like, you know, like, to those people, I just say, yeah, hop off the internet for 5 seconds. Like, isn't it hilarious, like, how... Yeah, they're so particular.
Yeah.
Something else to cry about. Yeah, having a little bit of a cry with a little bit of a hanky. they almost need to be put down to bed. You know what I'm saying? Like to have a little nap with a cold cloth over their head. You know. We had Rambo Last Blood trailer came out. Obviously, this is Rambo 5, and I believe it's the final one in the franchise. I know. I thought it was pretty exciting. Violent action scenes. Rambo's come home. I believe he's breaking down some sex slave rings and stuff from what I've seen Chuck Dixon talking about.
Yeah, can I make a confession, though? I've never seen any of the Rambo movies.
Really?
Yeah.
Never. Wow.
Not that they don't interest me, I just never got around to it.
I definitely recommend First Blood 1 and 2. The first two movies are very good.
And those are the ones that appeal to me the most. But this one looked cool. I wasn't sure if it was, like you said, a sex ring or if it was the cartel, but...
Well, maybe it's a cartel running a sex ring.
Yeah, it could be.
Well, I believe from what Chuck Dixon was saying, who is pals with Sly Stallone, that apparently it's sex slave trafficking or something, or like a ring of sex traffickers or something. Like he's breaking down.
Okay.
And Rambo's really interesting. Like his First Blood, the first one is really a good movie. And First Blood Part 2, where he goes back to Vietnam to rescue the POWs, is also a really good movie. 3 is not good. And the last Rambo he did, like, about 10 years ago is pretty interesting as well. But really, you only need to watch 1 and 2 to get a total. Like, that's the peak of Rambo, you know?
I'll give it a shot someday.
Yeah, yeah, I think you'd probably enjoy Rambo First Blood, the very first one, is actually a very strong movie in itself. It then goes a bit more action-centric after that. Now, do we want to cut straight into Batman 77 news? Would you like to just get right into it right now?
I'm ready if you are.
I am ready. I read it last night. Now, this is a weekly comic, but we're bringing it into the main news due to a big story item. Now, look, I'll say it once again on the scene for the fucking final time. This is spoiler heavy, okay? Like, so if you're someone who, you know, wants to have a little cry, you know, fast forward like 2.5 minutes, for Christ's sake. Now, Batman 77 came out. It's part of the City of Bane storyline, which, as usual with Tom King, I'm finding completely stupid. Like, it, basically all the villains are now, like, cops and stuff, and like, the Batman family is, like, exiled from Gotham City. That's what I'm picking up from this storyline. Am I right?
Yeah, I think Alfred was held captive. He volunteered to be held captive to keep the rest of the family out because he was worried about him.
Yeah, and Batman and Catwoman are kind of kicking back in France, are they?
Yeah, I think Batman had a confrontation with his father, and then he ended up in France somehow.
Yeah, and then he ended up in France, and, like, just the thought of Batman bowing down and staying out of the city annoys me, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's supposed to be... I don't know. Yeah, I don't mind the story arc, but I didn't really like this development.
So in this development, Damian is basically Damian's basically being the impetuous hothead, and he's going into the city to confront Batman's father, who actually is Batman in an alternate universe. Okay. And then it's so shit. And so he goes in, he's kind of captured, and then in front of him, Bane snaps Alfred's neck, and so Alfred is killed. And for me, like, we don't know if it's 100% confirmed,
yeah,
you know, but, like, I'm not a fan of it. I think it's a pointless death. I don't think Alfred should be killed off in the comics. You know, but will it stick? Hopefully not. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with serialized storytelling, is they try to leave you on those cliffhangers. And yeah, King did that with Heroes in Crisis, and I kind of defended him. I'm like, well, maybe there's more to it, maybe there's more to it. But at a certain point, these things he's doing are just kind of annoying to me. And it's like he doesn't learn when people get real pissed off about something dumb he does, and then he does something else. Yeah. I like the guy's writing for the most part, but just some of his developments I'm not a fan of. But hopefully Alfred isn't dead.
Hopefully. And like, I've read comics for a long time too, and I certainly didn't think it was as open shut as it might appear on the page. Then Damien's taken hostage, and it's supposed to be like an escalation. Like, Batman won't come back if Damien, you know, is held hostage, kind of thing. I just, like, I've got issues with the way he tells the stories now. Like, I don't find him a particularly good comic book writer, like, a lot of the time. I feel like they lack drama. I think it's kind of not a great concept, even, like, having all the bad guys suddenly are sort of like police officers and stuff. I don't know, I just... it doesn't ring true. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, when I'm reading it, my suspension of disbelief is kind of shattered. Like, I'm not really buying into the storyline.
It does just, seem and pretty, yeah. I can't think of the word, just pretty over the top, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. And it just, there's just something about his writing that's just not connecting with me. I was a big supporter of his early on, and I've really kind of turned on his writing style. I didn't think it was a particularly good issue.
Well, he does this thing now where it's like every... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but he does this thing where, like, every issue is a like a gimmick. Like, you know, it's like a one-shot story, and he has a particular storytelling device he's trying to do, and a lot of times it doesn't work, and a lot of times it doesn't fit together well. But,
yeah.
You were saying you hope he's not dead.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with what you just said. Like, it's like a storytelling gimmick. I'm also so sick of hearing them say Bat-Cat to each other. You know?
I hear you, but I also think it would sound dumb if they called each other Batman and Catwoman back and forth all the time, too.
Well, wouldn't they call each other Bruce and Selena?
I guess that makes sense.
Well, that's what they've always called each other for many, many decades, you know?
I guess you're right. I guess in the interest of if you're up on a rooftop and you don't know who's around, that would make sense. But if they're in private, then yeah, for sure.
Doesn't stop Batman from constantly saying Damian.
True.
I don't know. I also have, and I want to go on record here, I have enormous issues with the treatment of Batman's father. Because Batman's father wasn't an evil guy, like really, in Flashpoint and stuff. And suddenly they've turned him into sort of like a villain. And I don't understand it.
Yeah, I'm not really understanding. I know he's trying to keep Bruce from becoming or needing to be Batman, but it's just the way he's gone about it is just kind of strange.
It just feels like they took the character of Batman's father, Batman from Flashpoint, and made the decision to turn him from a sympathetic character into a villain. And I'm like, I hate it. Like, I just think it's a real waste. Like, that's Thomas Wayne. That's Batman's dad, you know?
Yeah, there's been a concerted effort to make Thomas Wayne kind of a bad guy. There was the video game where he was not, you know, a sympathetic character, and then that Batman Damned book that made him into kind of abusive.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it either. I think it's a disrespect to the legacy, but that's just my personal opinion. I don't think we'd gain a lot by it, like by making Batman's father kind of a jerk now. I don't think we'd gain much by it at all.
I'd say just stay away from it.
Yeah, I'm staying well away, man. We won't need to cover it in weekly comics, I guess. What would you give it as a score as a comic book? Because I'd give it 5.5 out of 10.
I gave it a 7. I think it was a well-structured story with a good art. But, yeah, like you say, I just didn't really like that development. But it wasn't a particularly great issue either, so.
No. Okay, well, turning to some other news. Now, I wanted to recover this. We covered this last episode a bit, but I want to cover it back with you. Kevin Smith has a new He-Man animated series coming from Netflix. So it's an anime series. It will be a reboot. No, it's not a reboot. It's a continuation of the original cartoon. I listened to Fat Man Beyond where Kevin Smith was doing a Master Universe panel and went into a lot of detail about it. Now you're obviously a lot younger than me and would not have been around at the peak of the He-Man and Master Universe phase in the 80s. Nope. So what does it mean for someone like, because it was really cool. It was for a while, for about 3 or 4 years there, if not a bit more, it was the number one toy property on the planet. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it had a lot of supporters and fans. I was a big fan myself. And then it kind of, it crumbled to dust very quickly. I don't know if you've ever seen the Things That Made Us
episode.
The Toys That Made Us, yeah. That was an excellent episode talking about He-Man, how it was so huge and then suddenly it just collapsed. Now there's a movie coming, a live-action movie coming, and Kevin Smith's doing this series. It's from the same people that did Castlevania, the same animation studio that did Castlevania. What's your response, Adam, as a sort of younger guy to this continuation?
Well, you know, I hear that Castlevania show is great, so that's cool. But one, I don't really know much about He-Man. Yeah, it seems cool, but I've just never gotten into it.
Sure.
Two, I like Kevin Smith's podcast, and he seems like a funny guy, but I'm not. I've never been a fan of anything he's really done. I know that Mark Bernardin, who's on the show with him, is involved, and they always seem like they have good story ideas and stuff, so it might be interesting to see if they can really put their money where their mouth is with, you know, when they actually collaborate, if they can make a good product or not.
That's what I'm finding interesting. I think Kevin Smith's got some decent ideas. I think his movies have gotten progressively worse as years have gone on. Sure. But it just feels like he might have a bit of an affinity for this character, and I like what he was saying. He was very saying, like, in the original show, we want to give you all the episodes that you wish they'd made. Like, the episode where Skeletor almost wins, they never really made it. Like, he sort of says we're going to go a bit deeper and we can continue on with those themes. And, like, honestly, I'm sort of open to it. I'm like, well, maybe they really can do something special here.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy it if it's something you enjoyed when you were a kid, you know, that you can get into it and enjoy it.
Yeah, well, it's obviously going to be a more sort of adult take, or at least more sort of a teen audience take. I don't know. I'm excited by it. I mean, Kevin Smith for me is so hit or miss creatively. Like, sometimes I enjoy his stuff. Like, early in his career, I was a huge Kevin Smith fan. You've got to remember in the 90s, Adam, we didn't have, like, all the superhero movies.
Yeah.
So just having him in Clerks mentioning comics was, you know, and I mean, his early movies was something special. And I did, I rewatched Clerks recently, and I think it still holds up as a pretty good movie. But it felt like the further he got away from that, ever since Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, I really detested that movie in cinemas, and I really kind of turned on Kevin Smith after that. Recent years, though, listening to him more on his podcast, I'm like, the guy, in between being an enormous shill, does make some pretty good points at times.
Yeah.
He's an interesting guy. Oh, he's a huge shill. Like, he's unashamed. Like, that's something where I think he probably should look at his brand and work out what he's doing, because everything that comes out he says he loves.
Yeah.
And if you're standing up for everything, you stand for nothing. You know?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, and I just – that's a mistake I think he makes. Like, whatever the movie, he goes, I was stoned and, you know, I enjoyed it. And then you're like, okay, so that's a pretty weak review from a director, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. So we'll see. We'll see with this He-Man thing. I will definitely check it out, though, because I did love the original, that and Shearer. My sister and I used to watch both of them for many years because it was forever on repeat. You know.
Yeah. Like I say, before my time, but I know it was a big deal. Several years before I was born.
Yeah, several years indeed. Yeah. Decades before, more likely, probably. Mm-hmm. Now, what about this news? Keanu Reeves and Carrie Aaron Moss. Annie Moss, making a fourth Matrix movie. Lana Wachowski is set to write and direct the sequel. Now, this is some big news.
Yeah, and they've talked about this for a while, and it's good to see that it's finally moving forward.
With Keanu being so hot right now, that must have been a big factor in restarting it.
Yeah, you know what's surprising, though, is that only one of the Wachowskis was announced to be involved, so...
That's strange. The other one wasn't mentioned at all in the press release.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't think you can really do anything to hurt the Matrix legacy at this point. You know, a lot of people don't like 2 and 3. I like them well enough, but...
I like 2. I like 2 more than 3. Yeah. I felt that it was a pretty entertaining series. I own it on Blu-ray. I mean, I'll definitely watch it again before I go and see the new movies, you know?
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, 100%, dude. Like, I mean... It's kind of exciting to think that it's coming back. And, like, Keanu's still pretty damn cool. And, like, he's going through a real phase at the moment where, for me, he never really goes away. He's always pretty consistent. He's doing the Bill and Ted 3 movie right now. I'm following it closely on on Facebook. Yeah, I'm part of their Facebook group. And they're putting out quite a lot of promotional stuff for it, like quite a lot of photos from the set and stuff. Like, I'm a huge Bill and Ted fan from way back. I'm showing my age, but when I was in high school, like, those movies were everything to me. I thought they were some of the funniest movies I'd seen in like a long time.
Is it the second one that most people don't really like that much?
Dude, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is one of my favorite all-time movies.
Okay.
Yeah. Excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey are both very strong.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was as well-regarded.
No, it was very well regarded because when it came out, Keanu was bigger. Mm-hmm. Like, so they did Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and then a couple of years later, they did Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which is the strongest movie of the two.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty damn funny, dude. Like, I don't know how it would translate to today's, you know, if you watch it on today, but it's pretty funny. Like, it's got what's that guy's name? Carlin? Is it? George Carlin's in it. Yeah. It's got some funny stuff in it, dude. Like, I mean,
I think I've seen it's them very sort of, years.
It's very stoner humor, yeah. You know, like, which at the time I was right into, but it is funny. Like, so Bill and Ted 3, I mean, I assume this is going to Netflix. I mean, will I watch it? Yes. Are my expectations reasonably low? Yes.
Hey, you might be surprised then.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we'll see. Some Pitch Perfect 2 news. Pitch Perfect 2 news. Pitch Perfect 2's Fleur Borg joins James Cameron's The Suicide Squad. Now, I have no idea who this person is. Are you more in touch with youth culture? Do you know who Fleur Borg is?
I've seen the movie. I had to look him up, but he was pretty funny in the movie.
Okay.
I'm not sure who he would play. He's like a German DJ. So I don't know if
there's. Is he related to Bjorn Borg, the tennis player from the 70s?
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, well, this I put this news item in when we were very short of news. And yeah, if Stu was here, he would have deleted that.
It was slow news week until, like, Thursday, so I guess.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
But I imagine he might play, like, a goofy character. Like, I know they have Polka Dot Man in the movie already, but it'll probably be something like that, I imagine.
Fair enough. Some first set photos of WandaVision. These are two characters I couldn't give a single fuck about, Wanda and Vision. Where are you on this, man?
I'll be honest. I feel like every character has the potential for an interesting story, whether or not things will actually work out that way. But I almost feel like they might be taking inspiration from Tom King's Vision, because apparently it takes place in the 50s. And I almost feel like, because Tom King's been teasing a television writing role that he can't talk about, so I'm wondering if he's involved writing this as well as being involved writing in The New Gods, but... That's just
okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'll watch it, and apparently it ties into Doctor Strange, so I'll give it a shot.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting test of me. I guess I've got the Disney Plus service, so it'll be on there, so maybe we will watch it. But for me, Wanda and Vision have always been zeros, you know, basically. Wanda is better than Vision, I think, personally. I've never enjoyed Vision in anything. Comics, I don't enjoy him really in the movies.
I like his look.
His look is cool.
Yeah,
his look is cool. Everything else about him is kind of lame, though. And Wanda, in the comics, I'm not a huge on her, but definitely, I don't know, maybe it'll be interesting. But WandaVision, so that's happening. Do you remember for many weeks I kept saying it was going to be Scarlet Witch and Loki? I thought they were the show.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, and then after reporting on it for about 6 weeks, I suddenly realized that she has her own show and Vision's in it. So the Loki show I'm looking forward to. I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I don't know. Is he going to be in it a lot, or is it going to be like other ages? Because I remember you were speculating that it was like a female Loki and kid Loki.
Sure. Was I speculating that, really? That seems
okay. I thought
you guys
talked about it on the show. Maybe not. Maybe it was Stu.
Yeah, but yeah, it sounds a bit more like Stu was getting a little bit excited there. But that would be interesting, though, because like, the teenage Loki and stuff's been in the comics, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. Arnie Schwarzenegger and John Milas got together to talk King Conan. It was basically at a convention. There was a picture of the two of them talking, and Arnie did on his Twitter, he said, yes, we did talk about King Conan.
Who's John Milius?
John Milius wrote the script for the original Conan and various other movies of the time. He was a big screenwriter in like the 70s and 80s. He wrote the script for the original Conan the Barbarian with Oliver Stone, I believe. And it did various other things. He's quite well respected in the industry from around that period. He took a pass on the Apocalypse Now script and various other things. Like, he's quite a well-regarded screenwriter, and I think he even directed some movies during his career. But he's certainly aged now. And he was at a convention, and he's got a King Conan script that he wrote many years ago that Arnie's always trying to breathe life into. Do I think it will happen? Probably not, because it hasn't happened yet, and Arnie's been talking about it for, 20 years.
Yeah.
The closest they came was around the time Arnie became the Governator.
Oh, okay.
And he couldn't do the film then because he was obviously Governor of California.
Yeah.
But he's always talking about it. I think the people who own the rights to Conan are more interested in doing like a TV show, or were. They got very close to doing a TV show at Amazon.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go, honestly. I mean, I can see the fans of those movies wanting one last Schwarzenegger movie. I've actually never seen those movies. Do they live up to the character for you?
Not really. The first one's pretty interesting. But no, the Conan character is better than the movies. But yeah, they've got their place, though. Like, they've definitely got their place. The second movie is a lot weaker than the first.
Mm-hmm.
I still watch the first movie and enjoy it, for sure. Like, it's kind of like a pretty... It's kind of like, say, Superman 2. You know, like, is it good? Yeah, it's good. But is it everything about Superman? No.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a deserving spot in the franchise, and I think gave a lot of legitimacy to the comics and stuff, because the comics really riff on the movies. Like, in the 80s, the Conan comics were really going great guns, and a lot of that was due to the movies. So they have their fans. But no, I think Arnie's kind of like, I sort of think maybe the time's come and gone for that. What I would have thought would have been a good idea was to have Arnie on his throne telling a story with it, and younger Conan in flashbacks kind of thing.
That'd be cool, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that would be the kind of way to go, because the end of the Conan the Barbarian movie, the end of it's got like many years later, and Arnie sitting on the throne looking very somber, like an aged Conan.
Yeah. Though so I don't know if relying on Arnold for narration with his...
Sure.
You know, he's never been a great speaker, I feel like.
Stick around.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. So we'll see what happens there. We've got a new section on the show now. There's only one piece of rumor. It's called Rumor Mill. Do you like it?
I like
it. In Rumor Mill this week, Pierce Brosnan is rumored to play Alfred Pennyworth in the Batman, the Matt Reeves movies.
Sounds fine.
Sounds okay. I don't know if I see Pierce Brosnan as Alfred, though, but that was the rumor. But these rumors come and go, and Rumor Mill is going to kind of be a place now where just, like, rumors get reported on. And I don't know who put this rumor out there, and I haven't heard anyone reporting on it. I did a bit of a Google search before the show, and it feels like this might have just been a shot in the dark, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's not, like, somebody I'd think of for Alfred, but neither was Michael Caine, really. Just because I always picture the cartoon. Good. He was good, but I always picture the cartoon guy and, you know, somebody that looks like him. But, yeah.
Yeah, Michael Caine was, I hear your point. Like, you're looking for a sort of more aged Alfred, kind of like the original movies had.
Yeah, that's what it was always in my head, but I'm a
Michael Caine. Michael Caine went down the sort of like the he was ex-SAS, wasn't he, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm. Yeah, anyway, so look, watch this space. I mean, maybe there won't be an Alfred. He's killed in the comics now, so, you know, snapped his neck, snapped.
Yeah. You know who might be a better Alfred? Timothy Dalton. I was just thinking about Bond.
Yeah,
I think maybe I'd like to see Timothy Dalton better.
He's involved in the Doom Patrol show, though.
Oh, right. He's good in there.
As the professor guy. True. Then we had some news coming out from Punisher. Garth Ennis has two new Punisher series coming out. One is Soviet, and the other one is called Get Fury. I saw the art for some of the Soviet stuff. It's fantastic. Like, a lot of these Punisher fans are getting very, very excited now.
So this excites you. I always feel like you're more about, you know, the Chuck Dixon, Mike Barron stuff. But you like the Ennis stuff as well?
Yeah, I do like the Ennis stuff a lot as well. Like, yeah, Chuck Dixon and Mike Barron are definitely my two favorite Punisher writers, but Garth Ennis is very, very good. So, yeah, I'm very excited for this. Garth Ennis' Punisher got me back into reading Punisher comics. Like, I went down to the store and bought Man Called Frank. Yeah, I think he's a very good Punisher writer.
Yeah, I like how – I feel like he can get away with stuff, too, that other writers maybe can't, just because he's Garth Ennis at this point. He kind of has a reputation for –
yeah,
you know, the hardcore stuff, I guess.
Yeah, no, I overall, I really like Garth Ennis's writing. Like, he's not my favorite Punisher writer, but he's in the top three kind of thing. I think after Mike Barron and Chuck Dixon, he's the next guy.
Okay.
Yeah, no, for sure. Brian Michael Bendis is bringing the heroes back ahead of September's Millennium. The future of the DC universe is starting earlier than expected. The return of the company's beloved Legion of Superheroes, a group of teenage heroes from the 31st century inspired by the superheroes of today, was announced back in June as happening in the upcoming Legion of Superheroes Millennium series launching September, but they'll actually make their return in Superman 14 released this month. Adam, you must be excited.
I'm very excited. That Superman 14 comes out this coming week.
Okay.
And I'm excited for the Legion to come back. This is going to be a complete reboot, I think. So this is like the 1, 2, 3, 4th version of the team.
Wow.
So, you know, anybody can kind of pick it up, but I think it's going to be like Superman 14 through 16 and then the Millennium series, and then they have their own series starting in November. So very excited. It's been 6 years since we've had a Legion of Superheroes book.
Too long.
Yeah, to me.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. Look, and from what I understand, the character in Millennium is going to go from the 21st century all the way through all the ages and all the alternate futures and wind up in the 31st century. Am I right?
Yeah, and that makes me think that even though it's called Legion of Superheroes Millennium, they might not be in it very much, but we'll see.
And apparently the character who is an acknowledged DC character, whoever they're picking to be this person who's immortal.
I'm pretty sure it's Rose and Thorn.
Okay.
Who's not
I don't know those characters at all. Yeah, Rose and Thorn.
She's got like a dual personality. Kind of looks like Poison Ivy.
I see. Okay. Well, so that's the person you think is going to be moving forward. Well, it'll be interesting. We'll do Superman 14 on the show then, I think, just to have a look at it. I think it'll be interesting. And awesome. Bendis is obviously highly involved. Then this is something I'm very excited by. 2099 versions of Conan, Fantastic Four, and Punisher coming this November. The Punisher designs look fantastic.
Yeah, they look cool. Does he have like a? I thought he had like a skull mask.
Oh, man, it looks so fucking good. Like, I wonder if it's going to be Jake Gallows again. Do you think they're going to go back to the original characters from The Punisher 2099?
Yeah, I don't know. It looked like a lot of them were. But so.
Oh, man, I'm fucking readyh, for this shit. Like, Conan 2099, I'm less hot on because I think it's kind of stupid. But, yeah, I mean, Conan 2099 is dumb. But Punisher 2099 was one of those cool comics from the 90s, man. And I hope they bring Jake Gallows back, and I hope it's just full throttle. Like, I'll say this now. I'll get it in hardcover if it comes out.
Yeah, I think I talked to you about this a little bit. I hadn't really read any of the Punisher, but I always liked the Spider-Man 2099 costume.
Sure.
So it'll be cool to see, you know, these guys in a more modern take, where I feel like sometimes the 90s wasn't the best time for Marvel comics particularly.
No, and, like, their visions of the future. Like, I mean, dude, I reckon a really cool one was Ghost Rider 2099.
Yeah, I liked his costume a lot.
Yeah, I liked his costume. Like, some of the designs were cool. The stories could be a bit stupid, but Punisher 2099 was a pretty cool fucking comic, and I want to shout out Punisher Body Count, friends of the show, Jake and Dane, and, like, they love 2099 Punisher. So they'll be fucking pumped for this.
Yeah, and this is all spinning out of the Amazing Spider-Man book, I think. So,
cool. Which and you're a fan of that, aren't you? Nick Spencer?
I am. I'm really enjoying it, actually.
Man, I should make an effort to catch up on that, because I love my Spider-Man. It's just been sometimes with the show, I'll be honest with you, Adam. Sometimes with the show, like, you can appreciate, like, this week, it really is a grind to get through the weekly trade plus the weekly comics.
And record the show, yeah.
The show, yeah, but, like, it's just like, your other outside reading can sometimes really diminish, like, especially in other weekly comics you don't do on the show. That's the worst one, because you pick the weekly comics for the show, and then if there's, like, three other comics you want to read, I generally put them on the show, but if you don't catch them, like Nick Spencer's Spider-Man, it kind of falls by the wayside.
Yeah.
But what I might do is I might do sort of a binge of Nick Spencer Spider-Man, because I like Nick Spencer in general, so I'd be interested in reading what he's got to say about Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think he's better when he's going a little more lighthearted, like Superior Foes is kind of what this feels like.
Cool.
Where I know is Captain America, when it got kind of political, was kind of groan-inducing for some.
Yeah, it was a little long-winded as well. Yeah. You know, like, I did read it, actually. I was heavy into Cap at the time when I read it all, but I felt it was not his strongest work. Now, I've got another item here, which I'm sure Stu would have deleted. Who the hell are Marvel's Doc Justice and the J-Team being advertised by Marvel as their new Avengers, X-Men, or Thunderbolts? And there's no details at all. Very optimistic that they're saying it's going to be their new X-Men and Avengers, don't you think?
Yeah, I kind of rolled my eyes when I saw that. But then later I saw this is something that's going to be in the... what's the book with the Runaways?
Okay.
So, yeah, it's just a story arc there. But, yeah, the idea that
that's
these
a very,
guys are
that's
going to
be... That's a third-tier title, though, isn't it? Like, you know?
Yeah, I hear it's very good. I think it might have been up for an Eisner, but I'm not reading it.
I read the original Runaways, BKVs, back in the day, but I'm certainly not reading the new Runaways. Now, have you listened to Predator? Ray and I did a guest spot just the other day, and I want to point listeners to signal to it, to 20th Century Geek. We did a two-part show on Predator, the Predator movies, and some of the comics. And now, it announced, like this week, there's a new Predator game that's going to be coming out on consoles, which I am very excited by.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's, you know, the thing is when they do a new game. It's just hopefully it's good. There's just so many bad games out there.
True. Very true. Very, very, very true, actually, Adam. Now, I mean, Ray has been getting, and the guys from Inner Demons have been getting heavy into Aliens vs. Predator, the actual, the old game, the shoot 'em up game.
Was that a PC game?
It's a console game. Okay. It may have come out on PC as well, but it's definitely it was an Xbox 360 game, but it's backwards compatible, so you can play it on the Xbox One and stuff, and I imagine the same on the PS4.
Huh.
But anyway, a new Predator game sounds interesting, but yeah, I'll purely be going on reviews. Like, Alien Isolation is a very good game that came out a few years ago. Very good game.
I might be interested in that. I really like Alien and Predator. I wonder what this Predator game would be like. I know I was looking, because I said I was watching the Friday the 13th movies recently. There's a game where, you know, you go in and I think, like, there's seven players that are the counselors, and then one person is Jason. So I wonder if this could be something like that.
Yeah, man. I mean, interesting. Cool. Like, I hope you can go from the Predator's perspective, because that's the perspective I want.
Yeah, exactly. I would hope so.
Yeah, definitely, man. Like, imagine if you could only see an infrared and stuff as well.
Would you rather it be set in the jungle or the city?
Probably city. Concrete jungle kind of atmosphere, like in Predator 2.
It'd probably be cooler jumping around on buildings and stuff.
I think it'd be wicked. Like, you could use the stealth suit. Man, I think there's all sorts of options with the Predator game. I mean, I definitely... You know, eagerly awaited, put it that way. But you should definitely... Have you listened to the 20th Century Geek show that I did with Ray and Scott?
No, I meant to. You told me about it. I didn't get a chance to.
Oh, dude. It was really an interesting discussion. Like, they brought a lot to the table. Ray's a huge Predator fan, as is Scott. And our second show in particular, we covered, like, the lesser movies, like Requiem, Predators, and The Predator. But I tell you what, we also covered a lot of the comic ideas, and it was a really interesting discussion. Like, I felt like I got a lot out of the actual show itself. Like, they brought a lot to the table.
That's cool. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
I brought in my vision. I pitched my idea of this: a future world, aliens versus Predator with space marines, just endless killing. And that was my pitch. Just complete apocalypse. Like, you know, a military base kind of thing, overrun by aliens, predators hunting, and space marines in dark armor and just endless killing for, like, you know, just days on end.
I'd watch that. It kind of sounds like the second Alien movie, just with predators thrown in.
Yeah, well, exactly, man. And like, space marines in, like, big armor as well, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because, you can imagine how excited I was getting. Now, we've got Shopping with Dave and Adam, my new segment. Adam, have you been enjoying my new Shopping with Dave and Dave segments?
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I always like to sort of go outside of – I like to try to go outside of myself a little bit and just go for stuff that I feel is kind of classic. So Charles Schulz's Linus, a Peanuts collection hardcover, is coming out. Now, I am not personally, like, very knowledgeable, but I appreciate the impact that Charles Schulz had on the medium and Peanuts. I mean – it's one of the best comics of all time. Would you agree? But best strips of all time.
Oh, for sure. I'd say comic strips is probably, up there. I'm not, like, a huge Peanuts guy either, but they're definitely fun. There's a certain wholesomeness to Peanuts, too.
Yeah, that good old American Kana from the 1950s, man, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I just think as a hardcover, if there are any Peanuts fans out there, I think it's something worth checking out. Then we had Claws, How Santa Claus Began, Volume 1 graphic novel. Now, I'm not sure. Is this the first collection of the Grant Morrison Claws series? Because if so, it's awesome. I love Claws, the Grant Morrison series.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the first volume or not. I know he's done a couple. But
yes.
Yeah, it's not something that ever really appealed to me, but on your recommendation, I might check it out.
Me either, but I went in purely because of the name Grant Morrison. It's really good, dude, to be honest. It's some of the best modern Grant Morrison that I've read. Like, it's up there with, like, his Green Lantern, that kind of stuff. Like, it's high quality.
Uh-huh.
Then we had the Saga Compendium, Volume 1. I'm surprised they're only up to Volume 1 of this compendium, because they do a similar one for The Walking Dead, don't they?
Yeah, so for Saga, I know right now they're on a hiatus.
Hiatus, yeah. Yep.
So, I mean, this is definitely, if you don't have Saga, you should just pick this up and catch up on those first 54 issues. It's a great series.
Yeah, I'm thinking of picking up. I've got the hardcover of Volume 1, and I'm thinking of picking up Volumes 2 and 3 on hardcover as well for my shelf. I think the compendium is more of an economical option for people out there. For students, say, who are reading digitally, maybe they just want a big paperback for their shelf. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you can get those on Amazon a lot of times marked down to like $30 for the Walking Dead or Invincible ones, yeah. And that's how I have it, and they're nice collections. Yeah.
Have you read, in terms of Invincible and Walking Dead, how deep are you on those series?
I've read all of Invincible, and on Walking Dead, wow. I'm about 30 issues away.
Okay, cool. For Invincible, for many years was so hot on that title, I've actually got up to about volume 10 in the hardcovers.
Oh, really? How many hardcovers are there?
Oh, there'd be a few more after that. I think I'm about two-thirds of the way through, so they'll probably go up to about 20 or something like that. And I think I've got the first 10 or 11. I loved Invincible, dude. I actually look forward to a day where I can sit down and read it again, you know?
For sure, man. Definitely catch up.
Very good series. Very good series. We haven't done it on the show, actually. I reckon Stu would enjoy it as well.
Yeah, that's a hard one, though, because a lot of times that first volume people don't like as much because the twist doesn't come until halfway through the second.
Well, I loved Invincible. I thought it was a really good from the beginning.
I liked it. I just know it kind of picks up... the book was about to get canceled, and so he bumped up his plans in order to get things going. And that's where that twist, which I won't spoil here, kicked in.
The one about his dad, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Look, I'd recommend it. Like, what I liked about it as well is it's so different in tone in a lot of ways to Walking Dead, and the fact that he had two huge series running at the same time that I felt were quite different from each other. You know, like I thought it showed that he had quite a bit of range as a writer.
Yeah, and now I feel like that both of those are ended. He's trying to recapture that magic, hopefully, with his other books, but I don't know.
Well, dude, the guy must be worth a fortune. Sorry. He must be worth a fortune, though.
Yeah,
seriously.
Sure. You know, actually, that reminds me, that Invincible TV show. I hope that actually comes out.
Yeah, definitely. It was an animated show, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. That could
I'd
be
watch
cool.
it.
Yeah, me too.
If it had decent animation, like Invincible, it's violent, but it's violent in kind of more of a gory way than anything else. Like it likes to sort of show graphic deaths, but I wouldn't say it's a particularly, like, it's not that mature as a title. It's not like it's a hard R, although maybe some of the violent scenes would make it R. But I don't know. I found it was just kind of like it was almost like a really good Marvel comic, like a really good one. Kind of thing,
yeah, I'd agree
with just
that.
A little bit more adult touches. Like I have a lot of time for Invincible. I only stopped reading it just because I was so overwhelmed with other material. But I read a ton of it. A friend of mine put me onto it, and I read a ton of it at the time.
Yeah, I hope you catch up actually, and let me know what you think when you get to the end.
Will do. Yeah, no, I know some interesting stuff happened and some controversial stuff happened as it wore on. Then we had Harley Quinn Breaking Glass, which is an original graphic novel that's coming out from DC, I believe this week or last week. I actually, as you know, do the Batman Universe reviews for Harley Quinn. I've done them for the last 605 years. and I always share my review in on time. Dusty doesn't get angry with me. But I didn't do the review for Breaking Glass. Someone else took that one. But I'd be interested in probably getting a look at that because I'm a real Harley Quinn fan.
Is that the one that's like a young adult?
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I saw some art from it. It looked pretty good.
Yeah, it looked pretty good. Looked pretty damn good. I mean, I've just read so much. Someone said to me the other day something about the Harley Quinn title, and they made a comment about its quality, and I said, listen, I can't even at this point comment because I've just done hundreds of issues doing reviews. You know what I mean? Like, I've lost all sort of critical sort of appreciation. Like, you know, I do the reviews. I just go on how I feel about the issue itself. But he was saying it's a really bad title. I'm like, I don't think it's really bad. Like, I read it every single fortnight. It came out for, you know, 6 years or whatever, and then now it's monthly. So I think its sales are definitely slumped after Suicide Squad. For a while with Suicide Squad out, it was one of the highest selling books at DC, but apparently now it's really gone back down to about that 30,000, 40,000 level.
Yeah, I could see that. I feel like they don't push her as much as they used to. I mean, she does have like 8 books coming out soon, but
yeah,
she used to be – they used to call her, what, the third pillar of DC Comics.
Yeah, and I think that will return, though. I think that will return when the new movie comes out with Margot Robbie.
Perhaps, yeah.
Oh, I think so. She's a bit like Deadpool. She's a bit boom and bust. And when they're popular, they really try to maximize.
Yeah.
But I know, I think overall, like in general, I think the solo series that they've done ever since, well, it was pre-Rebirth. It was from New 52. I think in general, it's been a pretty strong series. I think Sam Humphries isn't the strongest writer for it. I think the series has definitely taken a dip in quality since Connor and Pomiati and then Frank Terry left.
I'll be honest, I haven't read much of any of it, but I'd like to. I'm actually meeting Jimmy and Amanda and Frank Thierry and Chad Harden at Comic-Con coming up, so it might be nice to...
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, give them a big hello from Signal of Doom. Frank Terry in particular has chatted with me online quite a bit. We want to get him on the show. And I'm a huge fan of Jimmy Pomiati and Amanda Connor. I think what they did on Harley Quinn and in their independent work as well is fantastic. They're huge talents.
Oh, for sure.
Amanda Connor's art is so good. Like, really, she's such a good artist.
I'm sad we don't see more of it, to be honest.
Well, she does all the covers because she was writing Harley Quinn. And that's another thing that really pisses Jimmy Pomiati off. They had a female writer on Harley Quinn recently, which some trades were reporting as the first female writer. And he's like, Amanda wrote the character for like 6 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's poor oversight, I guess.
Yeah, it's just there's just no editorial control these days in terms of the journalists. They just report whatever, you know. So much for journalistic integrity. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It went out like Michelle just looked across me and rolled my eyes when I said that. But like, you know, we're not in the days of Watergate anymore. Like the one thing about me is like Lois Lane than I am. I love to crack down a big story. Like I'm after the big stories. You know what I'm saying? Like something that would bring down a government or something. Couldn't you imagine me behind it all? You know, like let's not forget the time that I cracked the story about the Avengers thing with Roger Stern. I broke that one live on the internet.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, asking the hard questions. Let's not forget the time I went to see... It really did blow up. And what about the time I went to CB Sobolski about Wolverine and got a response?
Yeah. You know? He said it's coming.
He said it's coming, snicked. And, yeah, I mean, it's coming. So is Christmas. So is Christmas, CB. But where is it?
Yeah.
Jesus.
You better reach back out.
Don't get me, you know, talking about journalistic integrity because I really get on my high horse very quickly. Marvel Comics 1000 is the last thing that's coming from – that's considered buy-worthy coming out next week, I believe. Will you be reading Marvel Comics 1000, Adam?
Yeah, I'm actually really excited for that. It seems like kind of a gimmick, but
– Sure.
They have Al Ewing kind of tying everything together, and I've really been liking what he's doing lately.
He's a very good writer. Way too hot for the Signal, but very good writer.
Oh, something else I want to throw out there is, we talked about it before, but Superman 14. Check that out for the Legion.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So we will do Marvel Comics 1000 and Superman 14 next show for sure. I believe Marvel 1000, isn't this the thing where they've got all these creators and artists, basically, and everyone's doing kind of a page? Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think Al Ewing is the one that's supposed to tie everything together. They're also doing Marvel Comics 1001. I don't know what that'll be.
I would say that will be them milking it just a bit more.
Yeah.
they're like, we just worked out we can probably capture 50 to 60% of the audience and we'll just milk it for one more. And if enough people buy it, we'll do 1002. We'll just keep going until, you know.
I didn't order that one, so.
No.
I'm not going to fall for it.
You're not going to fall for that marketing scheme. Good for you, Adam. No, so we'll do that. Is it going to be like a 30-page comic or is it going to be, I imagine, a bit oversized?
I think it's 80 pages, that first one.
80 pages. Oh, God. 80 pages? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, it's probably like $12 or something, too.
Yeah, more like 25 bucks. I'll definitely put in weekly comics, but that means other books are going to have to go 80 pages. I guess it is their 1,000th issue.
Whatever that means. I mean.
Yeah, what does that mean? Like, there's got to be more.
They might have done the math of it's been 1,000 months since Marvel Comics number one. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. It's definitely the 80-year anniversary, though, isn't it? That's the key sort of 80 years. So what year did they start? 39. Like, I thought they started in the 60s.
No, I mean,
there was Marvel before that, wasn't there?
Yeah, you have Human Torch and...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because in World War II they were around.
Captain America.
Like Captain America. Yeah.
I think back then they were Atlas, but the title was Marvel Comics, and then they took on the name Marvel Comics. Yeah.
Yeah, because in my mind I was thinking they started around the time of Spider-Man, but no, actually Captain America was around for many years, wasn't he?
Yeah, it is kind of weird. It's like a new age, and I feel like people don't really think about anything that came before Fantastic Four.
Well, I tell you, the Human Torch sucked, the original Human Torch. When he turns up, it's Snore Patrol.
No one does.
But they're like, it's Human Torch, the original Human Torch. And I'm like, change the channel.
I don't have really interest in him at all.
We had him recently in a comic we did for Weekly Comics. It was, I think with Roosevelt. And he went down to the Bahamas or something. And Captain America was in it.
Was it that one that Ordway did, Jerry Ordway?
Yeah. It was okay. Like, to be honest, it was all right. Like, it wasn't like the greatest comic I've ever read in my life, but it was interesting. Weekly Comics. We're finally here. The favorite section of the show for some people. I mean, God bless them. I don't know why. Yeah. But we're going to kick off. Like, you know me, I like to go a bit experimental in Weekly Comics, and I picked StarCraft Survivors 2. So I went for a video game tie-in issue 2.
Yeah, I was wondering why you went with issue 2.
Well, because it was a Weekly Comics, Adam. That's why. That's what I do. I pissed you off with this kind of stuff all the time. So anyway, look, wow. If you weren't a StarCraft player, I don't know if you'd be picking this up. And if you were a StarCraft player, I was struggling to see any sort of resemblance to the original storyline. Like, I thought this was a reasonably well-told story with good art. Jody Hauser wrote the story. I thought the art was actually very strong. It wasn't exactly very dramatic or compelling. What did you think?
I was really surprised when you put that on there, but I checked it out. Well, actually, I checked out issue one. I broke the rules a little bit.
No, I read issue one as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought it was actually pretty good. I don't know anything about StarCraft.
Yeah.
I gave it a 7 out of 10. I was surprised at the end there was somebody that was dead. And I was like, yes. Is that somebody we're supposed to know? But then I think we were just supposed to be surprised that they were dead. I don't know.
I was confused. Like, I thought it was going to be a battle game, like a battle comic, because that was what the game was. The game was basically – the game was by Blizzard, so it was like I'm pretty sure it was like Warcraft, but it was in a futuristic setting. So you had these aliens and you had the humans and stuff, and it was like turn – it wasn't turn-based. It was like real-time – strategy, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like a war. I thought it was going to be like a war comic, maybe, which is why I picked it. But it just wasn't, was it?
No.
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't really feeling it. I gave it a 6 out of 10.
Okay. Not bad.
Not bad, but not great. Then we had the Deadpool Annual. I actually really enjoyed this comic. I gave it 7.5 out of 10. What did you think of the Deadpool Annual?
I'm not a big Deadpool guy, I'll be honest. I tried the Dug and Run that you always go on about, and it just wasn't for me.
Wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me. But I read this. I liked it pretty well. I gave it a 7 out of 10 as well. I actually gave a 7 to everything we read.
Okay. Do you want to come back on the Signal again after those comments?
I'm open to him. If there's something out there that speaks to
that's
me.
That's it, man.
I like him in the Uncanny X-Force, but...
He's good in Uncanny X-Force. Listen, if you don't like the Duggan run or the Joe Kelly run, Deadpool is probably not for you because they're the two best runs, basically.
Yeah, I haven't tried the Kelly run yet.
Yeah, he is very good in X-Force too. Rick Remender uses him really well. Look, Joe Kelly's run is very strong, but it's quite similar to the Duggan run in a lot of ways. Like, it's kind of a high bar for the character, but it's not, like, so aggressively different that, you know, Duggan sort of pays a bit of homage to Joe Kelly. What was the main thing? I'm getting confused between Absolute Carnage versus Deadpool and Deadpool Annual. In Deadpool Annual is the one where he goes back to take the – he fights Nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, and then at the end there, it kind of got a little heavy whenever you find out what the kid was
abused. Yeah. He was getting abused, yeah. And they kind of underplayed that, I felt, you know, almost.
They did, But it was good. Yeah. It was a good story. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Took it at 7.5.
And then we had Absolute.
No, you. What were you going to say?
I was going to say I saw that this was tied in with that Axe of Evil thing, where I thought it was supposed to be like an event, but I guess it was more low key, where it's just them fighting somebody that they don't normally fight.
Exactly. I did like the scene where he goes, "Is Neil Gaiman going to sue me for this?"
Yeah, the jokes in there were pretty good. Yeah. I liked it well.
No, it was good fun. Then we had Absolute Carnage versus Deadpool. I'm really not finding this Absolute Carnage event in the least bit compelling. This wasn't a bad issue, however. I gave it 6.5 out of 10, but I'm not finding Absolute Carnage at all interesting. Are you enjoying it?
I really enjoy the Venom title, especially the first trade. There's some really interesting retcons about Venom and, you know, make him actually interesting to me again, which I haven't cared about him in a while. But Absolute Carnage didn't really speak to me that much. But I like this one. I gave it a 7 as well. I thought it was pretty good jokes. And I'd never read anything by Frank Thierry, and I liked it.
I love Frank Thierry. I thought this was a good issue. I'm just not finding the event of Absolute Carnage very interesting at all. Like, I don't think Carnage is, like, the strongest character, and then you base a whole event around what I feel is a fairly weak character at the best of times. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be like a Venom event, but I just, the things they're doing with Carnage, just like, I like the idea of him being like a cult leader, but I just haven't found it that particularly. And then there's all those cult members there, and they all kind of look the same, so I wasn't sure what was going on.
Yeah, me too. It was a little bit jumbled, frankly, I thought. Exactly. We had Savage Sword of Conan 8. This is the continuation of the issue that Jim Zub is writing from last week, which is Conan's in like a gambling den and he's inherited the debt of this guy that he was protecting. I gave it a 7 out of 10. I think the art in this comic was excellent. I really enjoyed this comic, actually.
Yeah, I really like Patrick Zurcher's art. I gave it a 7 as well. I thought it was pretty interesting, but it wasn't something that made me really want to keep reading the title. I'm more interested in the Aaron book, so I might still get that one a chance. But
Jesse Aaron's book is good. The Savage Sword of Conan are more kind of like shorter stories.
It kind of reminds me of Legends of the Dark Knight, where
which was a great comic from back in the 90s. Great callback, Adam. Had some great storylines in Legends of the Dark Knight. Now, Savage Sword of Conan, is definitely sort of they're more episodic in nature, aren't they?
Yeah, I'd say so.
I don't know, but dude, I'm going to wait. Like, I'm getting all the omnibuses of Conan as they're coming out, but I think I might do the same thing for the new series as well. Like, I really appreciate what Marvel are doing here with Conan. They're really giving Conan the big push.
Yeah, for sure. Are you keeping up with the Aaron stuff or no?
I sure am. Yeah,
okay, for sure. I hadn't heard you mention him in a while.
No, I think we did the last one on the last show. I'm completely up to date on both of them. Yeah, I'm reading them. I'm reading, and that's rare for me, basically, that I do. I like to let an issue savor for like 5 or 6 issues and then read it in one go. Mm-hmm. But with Conan, I'm such an addict that I read it week to week. And I don't think either of them are better than about a 7.5 out of 10. I think they can get better. I'm hoping Jason Aaron. Sometimes with Jason Aaron, he starts slow. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. But I like Savage Sword as well. Savage Sword for me was originally a black and white comic from the 70s through the 90s, and was the strongest Conan comic for me of ever. Like, it was in black and white. And I know in the modern marketplace they can't do black and white comics. You know, like, Marvel won't put out a black and white comic.
Walking Dead, you know.
Well, that's a good point. But that's
Marvel
a very good
probably
point.
Won't. You're probably right.
Marvel probably won't, yeah. But, I mean, they did do it for like 20-plus years, and it was more adult-themed. That was the difference. So it had like a bit more sexuality and stuff to it, and a bit more violence than the comic book approved regular Conan title. And I thought the Savage Sword of stuff is way better from back in the 70s. And I mean, as I said, I'm getting the omnibuses. They're coming out. The second one's about to come out.
You know, I'm surprised they don't do that since they already have several titles. Why don't they just do like a Conan Max or whatever? But I guess they don't want to.
Well, yeah. This Savage Sword of Conan was back in the, like, this would be the one that they would do it in, you know? But it came out in the 70s, and at least in the 80s, as a magazine format. So it was a bit bigger than the original comics.
Yeah.
Like, Chuck Dixon's run on Savage Sword of Conan is the best Conan that I've ever read. Roy Thomas is heavily involved. Jerry Ordway is involved. Like, a lot of big-name writers worked on Savage Sword over the years as well, so... No, there's a lot of great stuff out there. Like, it is a good time to be a Conan fan in terms of a comic book collector, because they're reprinting all the old gold, and it's also got new stuff coming out as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in a golden age.
Yeah, I'm loving it. How weird is it, the Dark Horse stuff that Dark Horse put out is now being reprinted by Marvel Comics because they bought all the rights?
Yeah,
so they're repackaging those as epic collections?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's nice to get it all collected again, but it does seem weird that, you know, they're able to reprint the Dark Horse stories.
Well, they bought all the rights to everything, and Dark Horse were only licensing it. So I'm getting those epic collections, and they're fantastic. The Dark Horse stuff is really strong as well. So Marvel are playing from a pretty strong hand with Conan.
Well, is that Busiek mostly that does that, or Brian Wood?
He did the first 50 issues with Busiek, with Curry Nord, I believe his name is, on art. And it's very strong, very strong. Cool. I collected some of them in hardcovers when they came out, but I'm really enjoying buying the epic collections. For me, Conan's the big sort of character I'm going behind in 2019.
I can tell.
It's a great time to be alive, basically. Yeah. You know, like, You know, there's violence occurring all through the world. People are fighting in Syria, but at least David's got his Conan comics, you know?
I'm happy for you.
Thanks, man. Black Mask, The Year of the Villain 1. This was a one-shot. I'll be honest, I like Black Mask a lot, and you recommended this comic, Tom Taylor. I really enjoyed this issue. When I read it, like, the art's a bit weird, but Renee Montoya and Batwoman. This was an issue that I felt was actually better than I expected. Like, there was a lot going on in this book. Tom Taylor is a really good writer. I'm giving this an 8 out of 10. What did you think of this issue?
See, I kind of had the opposite experience as you. I didn't dislike it, but I'm mostly new to Black Mask from Under the Red Hood. I really liked him there.
Sure.
And I really like Tom Taylor, and I feel like he generally puts out really solid stuff, and Cully Hamner is a really great artist. But just something about this take on the character I just wasn't a huge fan of. I didn't find the story particularly interesting. It was cool to see Batwoman and Montoya pop in.
Yeah.
But, yeah, overall, I just wasn't a huge fan, but it was you know, I wasn't disappointed I read it, but just kind of average stuff for me.
I didn't know that he came from the Janus cosmetic sort of like business side of things. I didn't know that was Black Mask's origin at all.
Yeah, I didn't either. I guess I really didn't know much about Black Mask, so maybe I shouldn't.
I only know him from like Catwoman. He's a Catwoman. He's like kind of like the gang boss in Catwoman.
Yeah, I knew that. Well, I guess I guess that's my main exposure to him as well.
Yeah, look, it was interesting. Yeah, it was a kind of controversial take on his origin. Like, he was more of a punk than I realized Black Mask was. But Black Mask is kind of a funny character. Like, he's got a kind of a sense of humor. If you remember from Under the Red Hood, the movie, Black Mask is actually pretty funny in that.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Yeah, no, so what did you give it out of 10?
I gave it a 7. And so far, these Year of the Villain specials are just okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to be buying the collection, put it that way. Like, I'll read them as they come out. They're kind of entertaining, but it's kind of forgettable comic books, you know?
Yeah, same.
Do you sometimes think, I just want to go on a bit of a tangent here. Like, back in the, I mean, I know you weren't around back in the 80s like me, but, like, when I picked up comics back then and I kind of would get them and I would sort of put them in my drawer after that, like, I didn't envision an age where I'd be collecting all these hard covers. Like, some of this stuff is supposed to be throwaway material, isn't it, almost? Like, read and forget.
I think that's true, but at this point where they're $4 each and you can get a month subscription to Netflix for $8, you kind of expect a bit more maybe, you know?
True. Very good comment, Adam. That's very true, actually. Like, Disney's rolling out Disney Plus for $6.99 a month. And think of all the stuff that's going to be on there, you know?
Exactly.
No, there is, good point, good point. So, yeah, you're expecting a bit more from your titles. And you gave this one a 7?
Yeah, I gave it a 7. It was good. It was fine.
And we've already covered Batman 77 in kind of in general, in the, sort of covered the bullet points. I gave it a 5.5 out of 10. You gave it, what, a 7 again?
Yeah, 7. 7's across the board. Nothing really impressed me too much. The best book I read this week was probably Jimmy Olsen, which I knew you probably wouldn't be interested in, so I didn't mention it.
I read the first issue of it, Matt Fraction. So good to see Matt Fraction back doing comics again.
Yeah, especially, like, fun comics again.
Yeah, indeed. Well, now we're turning to Trade of the Week, Legion of Superheroes, The Great Darkness Saga. Paul Levitz and Keith Given. I know you're the Legion aficionado. Do you want to give listeners the kind of basic pitch of this Great Darkness Saga, which, as you say, came out around about 82?
Yeah, I think it came around early 80s. This trade... it's like a deluxe edition. It covers the first portion of Levitz's run, which is more than just the Great Darkness Saga. But the Great Darkness Saga itself was a kind of one of the first epic stories at DC. Like, I don't know. It was kind of a big deal at the time because they didn't have a lot of five-issue crossovers where... as much back then, but basically there's a threat that's... I wish I would have prepared this actually a little better, but...
Just got from the top.
Yeah, they have a threat and they don't... There's five disciples of darkness that are attacking and kind of attacking all these, I guess, objects of power or people of power. Some of the Legion's biggest villains like the Time Trapper and Mordru. And they're kind of sapping the powers from them for their leader. And then it's kind of a mystery who the big reveal of the villain is, and it turns out to be, spoiler alert, Darkseid.
Yes, indeed. So Darkseid turns out to be the villain, and that is actually quite well concealed, really, for the majority of this comic.
Yeah, the only thing is they put him on the cover of the hardcover. Back in the issues, he wasn't on any of the covers until part 5, where he's already been revealed. But, you know, this is kind of considered the greatest Legion story. To me, the run itself, Paul Levitz's run, is pretty great, but this story particularly isn't... I wouldn't say it's the best Legion story. I consider Legion Lost the best story, but I think this is a pretty good place to start with the Legion.
Yeah, for me, I did have a background in the Legion because... the tail end of DNA's run in the 2000s and Mark Waid's run I read. Mm-hmm. And I read it for a couple of years, and I kind of got not heavy into lore, but reasonably knowledgeable of the lore. Mm-hmm. So there's if I hadn't read that, I would have been absolutely lost with these characters. There's so many characters with so many different powers.
So this is your first experience with this iteration of the team, because I'm sure you're aware there's 3 or 4 different reboots of the team, but this is the first that you've ever read of anything like this?
Oh, okay. This is the first I've ever read of the classic kind of like 80s run or whatever, yeah, for sure. I do like them, though. Like, don't get me wrong, I like the Legion, and like when I read it all those years ago for about that 2-3 year period, I did fall in love with the characters. This one is, I would say, less new reader friendly. This is very entrenched. That's why I wanted to read it the whole 400 pages. I wanted to read it from the start of the collection. And I found I was just bombarded with so many names and so many powers and so many stories. It was a very dense comic. It was a really long read for me. I was kind of like, shit, I bit off a bit more than I could chew here, but is it enjoyable? Yeah, it is. And like, there's so much to like here, like especially when Keith Giffen comes on as art. I find the art's actually incredibly good.
Yeah, he was really solid. This is 80s Giffen, early 80s Giffen, because he had so many different styles going through his career. But to me, this is my favorite.
Did Keith Giffen do Justice League International with DeMatteis?
He did. He wrote that with DeMatteis, and also the art was by McGuire. Yes. He didn't do the art there, but...
Okay, right. Okay, I knew he was involved, right? But he didn't do the art. Because I kept thinking, like, this art seems so different from what I knew from that art. Like, Keith Giffen, like, adds to this title. I like Paul Levitz's writing style. I thought that the Legion stuff in it was... There's kind of a sophistication to it. Like, it was really coming out of that 70s era. And you could kind of... There was, like, a disco trappings on the book. Like, didn't you get the vibe that there was a bit of a 70s vibe to sort of... Some of the characters that are kind of wearing almost, like, disco uniforms at times? Like... It's kind of wacky in a lot of ways, but it's so out there.
Yeah, this is kind of the transition from the 70s to the more modern stuff. Actually, one issue before, I can't remember if Cosmic Boy wears his disco costume.
Oh, yeah. Cosmic Boy's got a terrible costume.
With his all flesh.
That gets chains. Yeah, flesh. Yeah. I saw that's in it early. Early in the run, you see that, and I was like, wow, that's an odd choice. And then he changes the costume himself. Yeah.
And that's something Giffen did a lot of, was updating all these costumes throughout the run.
Yeah.
But Cosmic Boy is actually my favorite Legionnaire, so I was glad to see him move out of that costume into something more...
Less revealing.
Yes.
Well, yes, they're very fond as well of the... like the women with sort of like, I don't know what you call it, like low cut tops.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like,
the Legion bear a bit of flesh. But I did find, though, that like I can understand why people always say like you either went X-Men or you went Legion. And reading this, I can understand the appeal of the Legion to readers of back then. Like, to be honest, if I was reading DC Comics back then, which I wasn't, it was before I started picking them up. If I was in that age range of like a sort of like 13 to 25 year old, I would have been picking Legion up. I reckon it's a pretty good story. And I think it's one of those books that really rewards you for being a long-term reader, because there are so many subplots going. It is like the X-Men in that way. Like, there are so many characters and there's so much going on. And there's a real domestic drama to a lot of the storylines.
Yeah, it was kind of a soap opera, honestly. There's a lot of relationship stuff, and also, this was actually co-plotted by Levitz and Giffen, and then Levitz did the words, Giffen did the art. But yeah, there's a lot of relationship stuff, and Levitz would kind of do like an A, B, C plot thing, so
yes.
He'd focus on plot A while he'd have the subplot of plot B and also the subplot of plot C. After A is resolved, B becomes A and C becomes B. So,
I love that kind of stuff. That's like how Chuck Dixon writes his comics, and like that's I think makes it. I think when you do that style of comic for something like this, it makes it compulsively readable. Like to be honest, I was struggling with this book just due to the denseness, but I was drawn in by the story. So like it kept me interested despite the fact that like I didn't think it was. It wasn't like this was totally for me, but. It kept me. There was something about it that kept me going. It was quite compelling. I've got a question for you. What is Wildfire's powers? Because I think he's one of the coolest looking Legionnaires.
Yeah, he's pretty sweet. He is basically he was a man and he was turned into energy. So now what he is just energy inside of that suit. And when he first came on the scene, he kind of had all the same powers as other Legionnaires. Like he was able to grow, he was able to shrink, he had super strength, he could fly. But the thing with the Legion of Superheroes is to get membership, you have to have a unique power.
Yes, and you can only have one of the same power, can't you?
Exactly.
In the Legion, is that right?
And yes. So his unique power, he said, well, I can't show you because I can only use it once. He can use his energy blast to the point where he like empties his suit, but then you find out that he can just find another suit and he's fine.
Which he does in this comic, doesn't he, at one point?
Yeah, his suit gets... it's kind of like a trope with the Legion, is his suit getting destroyed and him having to find a new one.
Oh, look, I mean, man, like, I want to... what do you want to say about this run? Because for me, this is... It feels like when I went and bought my first comic, okay? When I went and bought my first comic was Iron Man, all right? And it was an Iron Man issue... But I picked up and I hadn't read the 200 issues before it, and I just kind of got into it. And then I started picking up Iron Man, you know, on a monthly basis, and I got into it. It just feels with Legion like you have to just take that fucking plunge. You know, like you have to dive into the water. And, yeah, it's going to be overwhelming, and kind of this book was. But then you start to find your feet. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, this is considered the greatest – single run of the Legion, the Paul Levitz run. He goes for... He had, like, over 100 issues on the book.
That's good.
So, you know, as you get into it, he kind of really eases you in, and you really get to know the characters. He's the person that kind of first gave, good characterization to the characters. Before that, they were all just kind of interchangeable. But, you know, he made some really good, like, soap opera superhero comics. I definitely encourage anybody to pick it up and just give it a chance throughout that first volume. You'd really enjoy it.
And, I mean, is the rest of his collection... I believe there is another hardcover floating out there with post-Darkness Saga. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, there's after the Darkness Saga, there's one called The Curse, and that takes you through the end of that volume. But then the series relaunches with a new number one. And there's a story called An Eye for an Eye that's collected in trade, and it's also considered one of the better stories.
Levitz as well?
Yeah, it's also Paul Levitz and Keith Giffen. Okay. And it's the Legion of Superheroes versus the Legion of... Legion of Superheroes versus the Legion of Supervillains.
Cool. Really cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
And when they did New 52, didn't they bring Paul Levitz back?
He came back right before the New 52, about a year before. Jeff Johns was kind of revamping them. And then, honestly, it kind of went to crap after Paul Levitz came back. It wasn't... It's not a good time in Legion history.
Fair enough. No, it's had a troubled history in the last sort of decade or so, I think, really after DNA and Mark Waid's run. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was around 2007 or so, Jeff Johns kind of came on and did like a nice little trilogy of stories. But then kind of jumped ship like he does so often.
Yeah.
And then... they didn't really able to sustain their popularity that came around that time.
They're a really interesting concept, and that's kind of what I want to talk about here for a moment. Like, I remember Mark Waid was saying something like originally the Legion was kind of like the 50s vision of the future, wasn't it?
Yeah, they take place, yeah, like I said, 1,000 years in the future. So
future. Yes, but it was the future viewed through a 1950s lens, like originally. You know what I'm saying? Like with Superman and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's what makes kind of the stories kind of hard is the idea of the future back then and then trying to, in the later stories, they kind of explain away like, oh, you know, we were using outdated stuff because we couldn't get funding or whatever.
Yeah. And I'm not too worried about, like, the inner logistics of how they explain it away, but I find it a fascinating concept because as we move forward, you know, from the 90s to the 2000s to the 2010s to now, our vision of the future, it changes as technology and our viewpoints change in the current era. And, like, this is comic book storytelling, so often quite disposable. So I find that interesting in itself. That, you know, how things change, like, you know, rapidly over the course of, like, you know, 10 to 15 years, like, again and again. That's what must make the Legion quite challenging, I think, to write. And, you know, it also makes it interesting, though, as well.
Yeah, I'd say it is a challenge just to keep updating with, you know, because a lot of the things that are in this Great Darkness saga, like, their technology isn't that, you know, it's not really ahead of what we have now. If you think about
it. No, it isn't. But that's also part of the charm of the storyline. Like, I don't think, like, it dates it, but I don't think there's any way of getting around that kind of thing. I think that, like, you just have to accept that. I think that the soap opera elements of the storylines at times are relatively mature. I found it interesting. Like, the Legionnaires aren't afraid to have sort of romantic subplots and sort of a bit of almost infidelity at times, or certainly allusions to it. And, like, I was surprised by Saturn Girl and Cosmic Boy not being as prominent as I thought they would be, because when I've read Legion, they've been, like, front and center.
Yeah, and the Wade stuff, he's very they're both very front and center. But here it's kind of everybody gets their moment. I mean, they did in the other stuff too, but, yeah, the Cosmic Boy and Saturn Girl and Lightning Lad are the founders. But, yeah, in this run, it's kind of just more scattershot where everybody kind of gets their time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, like, I mean, it's 414 pages, and I know that because I constantly kept checking the page count. Because it was a lot for me to read in 1 week, and I should have probably paced it out over 2 weeks, because this is old-school storytelling, which, when it does is done well, I really enjoy. Like, when I was reading Alien Legion, for example, which is basically French Foreign Legion in space, I found that was dense but compelling storytelling. This is also dense, compelling, but there's a lot of reading to do, isn't there, like in these old comics?
For sure. I mean, I only read the 5 or 6 issues, which is what I recommended for the show, but you read more, and it took me
I wanted to dive in and do it justice. What did you think of the Darkseid reveal? Because I imagine at the time that would have I wouldn't have picked it at the time. If I was reading it week to week.
Well, at the time, too, Darkseid wasn't as big of a character as he is now. He was just in the New Gods stuff, and then he was in one Justice League story. And this is kind of what put him – I mean, a lot of people say this is kind of what put him on the map as more of a major threat to the DC universe. So, yeah.
Oh, he wasn't like the Superman villain and all that kind of stuff that he is now.
Not as much. I mean, because you had him in the New Gods stuff, and, you know, Superman was in that a little bit. And then there was a 3-issue Justice League arc that he was in. But, you know, this is kind of what put him on the map. And then Grant Morrison's JLA. And
Yeah. I want to talk about Superboy, because I feel that is a weakness of the title. Superboy, for me, I thought Superboy was the whole point of the Legion, was Superboy was in it. And, you know, in this, he's in it, but not very much.
That's kind of a complex thing. Yeah, they were eventually introduced in a Superboy story, and he, up to this point, honestly, was pretty consistently in the book, to the point where it used to be called Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes.
Right.
But, yeah.
And did they debut in – I thought they debuted in Superboy.
It was Adventure Comics, which was a Superboy title at the time, but, yeah. Yeah, so to what's me, your, the Legion what's your, works what's better your without viewpoint? Superboy. to be honest.
That's what I was going to ask you. I wanted to know if you thought it worked. Okay, so you think – because Superboy being in this comic, it didn't feel like Superboy was adding a lot, you know?
Yeah, when Superboy's around, generally, not so much here, he just kind of gets in the way where, you know, it's a Superboy book, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Superboy is a fascinating character. I always, like, when I was growing up, quite liked Superboy more than Superman. I don't know why. I think because he was younger. You know, he seemed less like a kind of god character.
Yeah, I get that.
But it was just, look, I wasn't knowledgeable of comics, so this came from purely just a sort of, like, live reaction. I always found Superboy was kind of interesting. But in Paul Levitz's comic, I would say Superboy is very superfluous. Like, you don't actually need him in the comic at all. He doesn't do much.
Yeah, they made a point of making sure every member of the Legion was in that storyline, which I don't think all of them actually were. But, yeah, that's pretty much the only reason he was there, was just to say, oh, here's everybody.
And at one point, he's like, I've got to go back in time now through the time barrier.
Exactly.
Like, bye-bye, Superboy. And see you, Superboy.
Superboy actually is kind of problematic for the Legion because at times, you know, Superboy never existed. So, like, John Byrne, when he did Man of Steel, he said there never was a Superboy. So it's like, well, what do we do with the Legion now?
That's a mistake, though, to me, to do that. Like, I think Superboy, I know he's stupid and doesn't make a lot of sense, but I think he's a very charming character, personally.
Yeah, I like having him around. I don't even know, is he currently a thing? Like,
no idea.
I don't know. But
don't know.
It's always interesting to see how they move with those hurdles, though. Like, okay, you can't use Superboy anymore, and then they have to adjust their storytelling to get rid of Superboy. And then they have to say, well, actually, Superboy never existed, so you need to stop referencing anything with Superboy, and you need to figure out a new history. And they have to move with those hurdles. And it's just, it's kind of impressive what they were able to do.
Yeah, that's hard, though. Like, you sort of feel sorry for them there, because I would have thought they could have gone down the Divergent Futures path. You know, like, in some version, Superboy existed.
And they were able to do that at first, but then they said, no, you can't do that, so they had to do something else, which if Jesus. You read, you know, 20 years of Legion of Superheroes comics, you might actually understand what they were trying to do.
And let's talk about you for a second. Have you read 20 years of Legion? Like, how much Legion have you read? Have you read the whole thing?
I've been trying to get every appearance of the Legion. I haven't read everything, but I've read pretty much everything from this Great Darkness saga to present, so that's like 35 years or so. But yeah.
And didn't you recently purchase the original appearance of have you got the original comic or something?
That I did, yeah.
How much did that cost?
A lot.
A lot.
$1,000.
My wife is nearby, I can't say.
No, it was $1,000, but I'm glad to have it.
Oh, no, God bless you for doing it. And you, as you said, you sold off a portion of your collection. I just think it's really cool that, like, so what do you do with that book, Adam? Like, is that book, like, in some sort of storage, or do you put that up on your wall? Like, what do you do?
I have it on a display. I need to get it fixed, but it has I'm going to get it graded, and then I have a little thing that it slots into that says Adventure Comics on it. So
that's great. Yeah. You know, Drew DeRacy, a great friend of the show, Drew DeRacy, does Drew's Views with us. He's got, like, one of the old spinner racks in his house. That's really cool. It'd be cool to have it, like, in a spinner rack, but in its case kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I'd like to get one of those there. I've come by them a few times, but they're always unaffordable.
Oh, that's no good. Yeah, they shouldn't be unaffordable. No, I just think it's cool. Like, I think it's really cool that you went and got that. Like, when I bought all the original Punisher run, which wasn't expensive, I fucking love that. It's sitting in my shelf, you know, I've got it up. It's basically the only single comics I've got, and I've got them in one of my wardrobes, just in boxes. And I just love the fact that you've got it there. So that must have been a sweet purchase to pick that one up.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not into a lot of the key comics or whatever, but this was one that was important to me, so
definitely.
I sprung for it. And it's cool having
good stuff.
It.
Yeah, definitely. And so you're saying you've read from pretty much Great Darkness Saga all through the 80s and 90s into whenever they finished in, like, 2010 or whatever. So you've got the – do you own them all?
I own almost every appearance. There's about 150 that I don't have, but I've been working on it.
I love it. And do you go to, like, is it like eBay or is it like you go to the old school sort of flea markets and to purchase them and stuff like that, or what?
Wherever I can find them. There's a lot of shops around here in Dayton and online. So Someday okay. I'll have them. I'll put them all in a box, and it'll be cool to have them all in one place.
Well, dude, when I bought Punisher Warzone, Punisher War Journal, and Punisher, and I mean, I absolutely love having all that stuff, you know, like, and I think there's a couple of issues that I'm missing that I'm going to go through and, like, and fill out. I believe it's, like, two issues. But also, like, how is Legion in terms of reprints? Because I know with Punisher, they're being very aggressive right now and publishing a lot of the great 80s material and 90s material. They're just really starting to really dig into it. How is Legion for reprints? Do you get, like, a lot of Legion stuff? I originally had the Showcase. When I got into Legion, because when I get into a new comic, I like to go back to the origin of the comic as well.
Yeah.
And I got a couple of the Showcase editions, which are the black and white sort of versions. What about yourself?
I have some of the Showcases and some of the Archives, which is like the color editions, but they're a bit pricey.
They're expensive, though. Yeah, they were expensive. Yeah.
But yeah, they're doing pretty good. I think they started a new colored hardcover. Like they're doing, like you have the Justice League ones, I think, the Bronze Age.
Oh yeah, I love those things, man.
Yeah, they're getting around to reprinting a lot of stuff, but there's the period from like 84 to like 94 that doesn't have anything reprinted, and then they're working on the stuff from like 94 to, you know, they're doing it in waves, which is fine. So hopefully they get around to reprinting a lot of it.
I think the thing now is, like, I'm getting more savvy. Like, when they reprint this stuff, if it's something I'm really interested in, I grab it now, you know? Like, because I think before I was like, because they're getting – DC, I think, are actually really good about some of the reprint stuff they're doing. They're getting – they're digging a lot into the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you know?
Yeah.
And I think – and God bless them for doing it, because a lot of readers – like us, like, we are reading the new comics, but really some of the old gold is where the real gold is, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I bring it up almost every show. I'm so pissed off that Dan DiDio cancelled Bronze Age Volume 3, you know? Because that would have wrapped up the whole fucking thing. And I'm going to keep saying it on the Signal of Doom until it gets released, because I've got the first two omnibuses, and I want that third suit omnibus, and then I've got the complete collection of the Bronze Age JLA, you know?
Yeah, I kind of feel like everything should be reprinted. To some extent. I mean, like the Hitman stuff you wanted and I wanted to check out, and then it got canceled, and it's like, well, you guys just need to reprint all this stuff.
Yeah, and hopefully with his Hitman greatest hits out there, they will have enough demand to put out the Hitman volume trades. Because I was talking to Jimmy King's Comics, and Jimmy's such a sweetheart. Yeah. He's going, yeah, man, they're all out of print, dude. And he's like, you can borrow mine. I'm like, it's cool, Jim. I've got it digitally, but I really think those Hitman trades would be something special. Well, look, is there anything else you want to say about the Legion? Because I want to say it's got a vast cast, lot of powers, lot of soap opera elements, but it is actually a good place to pick it up. And by the end of this storyline, I don't think most normal humans read all of 414 pages over a week, you know?
No, yeah, I would take
that's
time
not really the way to do it.
Yeah.
Now, I will recommend this to you, Adam. Completely different... sort of way of storytelling, but similar time. Alien Legion, which obviously bears one of the, you know, names, similar name.
Yep.
French Foreign Legion in Space. I reckon you'd probably enjoy it. It's very different. It's war-centric. It's French Foreign Legion in Space, but it has that same feeling of the Vision of the Future with a very diverse cast.
Yeah, sounds cool. I remember when you talked about it on the show, I think, right?
Yeah, I did a jump shots on it. Like, basically, Carl Potts, who I call the Old Master... He created it, and he had some other guys writing it. And then in the early 80s, I believe, or mid-80s, Chuck Dixon came on and started writing it. And his Alien Legion is fantastic. And he wrote pretty much all the Alien Legion ever since, with Carl Potts as sort of like the producer, and I think worked on some of the plots and stuff. It's really, really good storytelling. Like, I mean, I really found it compelling. And I think it's a completely different experience to reading Alien Legion of Superheroes from Alien Legion, but they share some similar ground in their depiction of the future from, like, the 80s, you know?
Yeah, and is it mostly in print?
Certainly some of it's in print. Like, the early stuff's been reprinted and is out digitally as well.
Cool.
But a lot of the gold of Chuck stuff you can find on the internet, but no, it's not available in, like, normal... sort of like collections, but there's stuff out there, you know, there's stuff out there that I can point you to. It can be had, exactly.
I want to check that out.
Now, I mean, I'm giving this Legion of Superheroes, I'm giving it an 8.5 out of 10, this Great Darkness Saga.
Oh, nice. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
And I want to say as well, I don't think we've talked enough about just somehow how good some of Keith Giffen's art is. Some of this Giffen artwork, as it goes on, really the sophistication level of the book rises when Giffen comes on board. Would you agree?
Yeah, a lot of people compare it to like a mix of Perez and Kirby.
Right. Yeah.
I really like it, and he's the one that kind of makes the future look. He kind of redesigns the way the future looks and the technology. I just really appreciate the work he did on the book. And he's been involved with the Legion on and off for, 20, 30 years.
Can I ask, what's Timberwolf's exact powers?
Timberwolf is strong. I'm not really sure. He's got, like, agility, strength. He's supposed to be kind of like a Wolverine.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And he's got speed as well, does he?
What's that? Yeah, super speed, yeah. I don't think he's got, like, intense... Like, he's not the Flash, and he's not, like, Superman strength or anything like that, but...
Sure.
He's just kind of more beastly. I guess I'd more compare him to the Beast.
Okay, fair enough. No, I just wanted to... Because there's so many people in this that you do get... And also, can you explain Mon-El to me? Because that was a character that I'm really struggling to understand what's going on with Mon-El. Is he Kryptonian?
He's not Kryptonian. He is from Daxam, which right. I think was a Kryptonian colony. On, it's kind of established as a Kryptonian colony, but he essentially has the same powers as Superman, and he came to Earth, and Superman thought he was his brother, so that's why he's called Mon-El.
I see. Right. Yeah.
So this was the 50s or 60s, but...
And he was trapped in the Phantom Zone for a long time, yeah?
Yeah, so he was trapped in the Phantom Zone from the present day, and he never got let out until 1,000 years in the future.
That's a long time in the Phantom Zone.
Yeah, it's almost like he wasn't really... Superman said he was going to cure him, but it was almost like he didn't really make it a priority.
It's almost like Superman saying he's going to turn Candor City into life-size and just takes fucking forever to do
it. Exactly, yeah.
And he's like, I'll get around to it one day, guys.
And another interesting thing, I don't know if you know Ultra Boy, he has the same powers as Superman, but he can only use them one at a time. So he can't fly and super strength. Yeah.
I thought that was really cool, actually. Like, there's a lot of little gems in the Legion about how they use their powers. Like, I quite like Bouncing Boy.
Oh, yeah, he's cool.
And Brainiac 5 as well. He doesn't get as much play, Brainiac 5, as he does in the Legion storylines I've read. Brainiac 5's kind of a bit more of a background character here.
Yeah, he's always kind of got a presence, and I think as it goes on, he's more important. And especially in the more modern stuff, like you said, kind of almost like the lead character.
Yeah, he's very important. And he comes from Kolu as well, doesn't he? The actual Brainiac, but he's good, unlike the Brainiac in the Superman comics.
Yeah, he's... Sometimes he's a descendant of the original Brainiac.
That's something about Legion that I think is interesting, and that's kind of what I want to talk about. Due to its length of time and all the reboots, I can just tell from talking to you, there's a lot of different versions, isn't there?
Yeah, it's hard to say things definitively, like, this character and this character are married some of the time, or this character's gay. Some of the time, and it's just kind of hard to walk that line of saying, this is how the character is.
Now, I believe Legion had, and I'm sorry if this is going on too long, but I find it kind of fascinating. I believe Legion in the 70s had a huge fan community. I believe Paul Levitz came from that fan community, from what I've heard with Paul Levitz. Like, Legion was one of those characters that really the readers kept alive, one of those concepts. Like, there was a big – do you know much about this? There was a big sort of fan presence prior to – sort of conventions. They used to have like Legion meetings and stuff. There was a real big fan base behind the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, there was a lot of like fan fiction, and they had a newsletter where I forget what they're called. I think they're called like APAs, but everybody would write like a sheet. They'd write some kind of article or do a piece of artwork, and they'd all send it to the same person, and then that person would compile all the different essays and stuff into a newsletter and send it out. But
if Adam the computer was alive in the 70s, if you were in the 70s, Adam, reading comics, you would have been pumping out these fanzines.
I would have been involved, yeah. Well, something else that's interesting is there was an election in this story we read, And it's kind of a Legion trend for that to actually be a poll that goes out to the readers. So they.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
But yeah, definitely.
For the leader, yeah. They vote on the leader, and there's a lot of debating about it.
Yeah, generally they do. I don't know if they do it every time, but this time they did, and Dream Girl won. But it's, like you said, there was a big fandom, and then a lot of times the stories end up incorporating what the fans kind of wanted. Like, for instance, Element Lad, he used to have a pink costume, so there was a bunch of fan theories that he was gay. And then eventually Tom and Mary Beerbohm, who were Legion fans in the 70s, made him gay.
Right, okay. Well, I mean, that's fine. I mean, it's interesting. Some of the outfits it feels like you've stepped onto the disco floor in 1977 or something. You know, like, they're sort of out and proud. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like Phantom Girl, she's got kind of a 70s outfit. And
yeah.
I think we mentioned Cosmic Boy, of course.
Yeah, and there's a couple that have got kind of flares. Like the woman who's all in white, she's kind of got, like, flared pants.
Yeah, that's Phantom Girl.
Yeah, I liked her costume. And who's the one with the wings?
That's Dawnstar.
Yeah, I quite like Dawnstar's design. I mean, some of the design stuff, I've seen Mike Grell. I'm a big Mike Grell fan of his artwork, mm-hmm. and he did some pretty cool Legion pictures and stuff that I've seen over the years.
Yeah, I think he actually designed Dawnstar and Wildfire. Okay. So maybe that's why I liked him.
Well, I mean, look, I'm glad we've had the opportunity to talk about it. Like, it's 414 pages, listeners. Like, if you want to sample some Legion, would this be the first place you take a hit from, Adam? Or is there other Legion you would reference, if you know, a new reader?
After rereading it, I would probably point you first to Legion Lost, the Abnett and Lanning series.
Sure.
Just because it's a little more modern, easier to get into. This is still the greatest single run of the Legion, the Paul Levitz stuff, but...
Yeah,
I'd probably point you to the Legion Lost stuff, even though that's actually technically a reboot, not this version of the team.
DNA didn't make it very, like, to be honest, DNA made it very new reader friendly, because I was a new reader, mm-hmm. and I found it pretty damn sort of compelling, you know, whereas this is a bit more like, okay, settle down, kids, you're gonna just jump in head first into the water. And I don't know, I wonder if... you know, back in the old days, back when I was picking up comics, you just kind of went with the flow, whereas now there's expectation that every comic, you know, they try to make it more accessible, supposedly, whether they do or not, so a different story. But I don't know, like, I would say if you've got a background in reading comics and have read a bit of Bronze Age stuff, you could jump in. But if you're just, like, fresh to the game, you know what I'm saying, I wouldn't say jump in at this point.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Well, Adam, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a real pleasure, and I'm glad that we covered Legion and kind of went a bit into the detail of Legion, because I think, for me, the concept of Legion is kind of cool in itself. You know, like, I think it's such a cool concept that they, from the 1950s, they had this vision of the future, and that vision of the future updates, and as you're saying, they had all these kind of reboot issues, and is Superboy real or not? Like, there must have been some huge challenges for the scripting teams at times. Can you imagine the conferences where they're sitting down over a lunch trying to work their way through this continuity minefield?
Yeah, exactly. It's something unique about the Legion is they're generally a more positive future than, you know, some others.
Yes. And coming from someone who normally, you know me, post-apocalyptic is my kind of normal cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, there's another part of me that just really loves the fact that this is a kind of more hopeful future. And I noticed that in this version, that the Science Police weren't the sort of meanies that they become later on. Like, I'm familiar with reading Legion where the Science Police are far more of sort of almost like an authoritarian force at times, aren't they?
Yeah, and the Mark Waid stuff, it was very much like a youth revolution was kind of the take, where these kids were together to rebel against the adults. But yeah, it's not something that was done here in this one.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Now... just so you know, we're going to have Ray on next week, because Stu's still away on jury duty. I mean, God knows what's happening on this jury. Are you as fascinated by me as what's going on this jury, Adam? Like, it
I
feels
really
like
am.
He's been.
I feel like I kind of forget sometimes that he's with the show, actually.
Well, yeah, because let's face it. I mean, did I prove to the listeners that I've got a solo show in me and that I've got plenty of dance partners? I think I did. No, but we're looking so forward to having Stu back. I know he's keen to come back. He just can't come on due to legal reasons, due to being on the jury. So he'll look. He'll when he's finished with this, he'll be back, and we can sort of pump him for the stories and stuff of what went on. I hope he's listening to the single. Do you think Stu's listening to the single when I'm just doing it? I wonder, don't you?
I don't think he is.
It's a lot of day for him to take in, you know. And I imagine he's just sitting there thinking, when will this guy, like, you know, cancel some of this news? Like, how long can a show possibly go?
Well, I do want to say I look forward to having Stu back as well.
Oh, for sure, for sure. So next week we're going to have Ray on. We're looking at doing a Valiant comic like Bloodshot or a Ninjak. I haven't exactly worked out which one yet, but we'll have him on, and that'll be a lot of fun. Ray is a ton of fun. But, Adam, it has been such a pleasure having you on. Is there anything you'd like to promote, anything you'd like to sort of shill? I mean, what have you got to say?
You know, I don't have any podcast or anything, but I would like to say, you know, if you're interested in the Legion, try out this new Bendis stuff.
Yes.
Because it should be a perfect jumping on point if you don't want to go back to this older stuff.
That's a good point. We didn't even talk about Bendis. But, yeah, Bendis coming on board, certainly a big fan of the characters, and his heart's in it. Let's hope he's talents there as well, because Bendis can be very up and down these days, can't he?
For sure. But if nothing else, at least they'll get the Bendis boost.
Exactly. That's very true. And that could be as good as anything else. And then people could really start to... Oh, I hope Bendis brings his A-game, because sometimes he does. Now, look, Signal of Doom, hit like on the Facebook page. If you can do a review of this on iTunes or wherever you're listening, like, I would really appreciate that. I've got my latest book, Des Moines Sulfide, is out as well. We've had some good sales recently. Check that out. But, yeah, just hit like on the Facebook page. I try to interact with there as many people as possible and try to put some interesting news and stuff out. Again, thank you, Adam. And listeners, good night.